go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Four days into the broadcast week, this is the seventh day of November 2013. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find the, hey, look, everybody, newly revamped, refurbished, and refurnished and reoccupied HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Big thanks going out to Sparky and Lottie, our chat room moderators, for splitting the cost and getting that sucker back up and running. It is so much nicer to be back home in our happy little chat room the way it ought to be. For me, it's especially handy because it means that I won't be timing out and getting booted and then missing out on the conversation. So thanks, guys. Thanks sincerely. That's what I mean when I say that this is a community effort, the Horn. Thanks, Randy. Randy, monitoring from PA, letting us know loud and clear on iTunes. Thank you very much. Thanks go out to Kevin, whose subscription came in early this morning, for helping us get started on our fundraising for this evening. You know, that's the only way that this continues to exist. And thanks also to Robert for helping out as well. So that means we are $55 into fundraising this evening. Also this Thursday, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, we have Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. You know, Shirley has a challenge every month, and it is well responded to. So a $150 challenge is on the table for the evening, and hopefully folks will kick in. 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25. Don't make me go any further. You know how I am with this. And then that challenge will be met, and we'll be able to crawl a little further out of the hole. Because we're in one. It's nice to get out of one when one... That's the first law of holes, when you're in one. So stop digging. Thanks, Dr. John. Dr. John with a note. You sound great on TuneIn. Much appreciated. And remember, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go for the chat room. It's also where you go for the listen live stream, although you can listen live on a variety of other streaming platforms in this, the mobile digital age.
Yeah, maybe I should say that in a cranky old grandfather voice.
But anyway, if you like to listen on your iDevice, your tablet, your Android device, what have you, I don't know, can you listen to internet radio on that poor little Windows 8 thingy phone? I don't know. I haven't heard from anybody who even owns one. But you can. There are great apps out there, in particular, as Dr. John noted, TuneIn. There's Stitcher. We're also listed at Dar.fm, Roku, Streama.com, a number of others. So there's a number of lots and lots of ways to listen to the Horn whenever you see fit. The podcast address, of course, is over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. I would also encourage you to sign up for the podcast for Dr. Bill O'Brien's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. You can also get the podcast for Rick Smith, and that makes the Horn lineup there, Dr. Bill, me, and Rick Smith. We happy few, as the saying goes. Did Rand Paul say that, or did Shakespeare? I'm not sure. I get lost now. I think Rand Paul said everything. Now, where to begin the evening? It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I'm not wait a minute, before I go any further. I want to share something with you, because I think there's a couple of things. Program announcement. No shows next Thursday, Friday, and the Monday following. I'm headed back to Wisconsin. We're going to be doing a little bit more activism work, trying to prevent what's happening in Appalachia from happening in Wisconsin. Unseen Dangers is the name of the events. There will be presentations in Ashland, Wisconsin, and Eau Claire, Wisconsin, regarding ultrafine particulates and the health hazard that they pose in communities where frac sand mining is taking place, as well as what can be expected if the bad hillbilly Chris Klein gets his way in the Pinokies range. Did I mention that they found asbestos ore rock in the Pinokies? Yeah, can you just imagine that reduced to a particle of dust the size of a virus, 1/100th the size of a human hair? Inhale a few of those and cancel Christmas. So, excuse me. So that's the broadcast schedule next week. And I just I wanted to make sure that you knew about that. But you may recall our friend Steve wrote in a couple of nights ago with what he asked for he asked for a horn gut check, and a number of you responded. And Dr. John responded, and part of his response, I forwarded Dr. John's response on to our buddy Steve. And in turn, I also asked Dr. John if it would be okay to share a portion of what he had written with the Horn Family Commune. Recalling, of course, that we call it the Horn Family Commune because some people wanted to call it a commune and some people wanted to call it a family. And so, therefore, we split the baby, ew, and called it the Horn Family Commune. Dr. John wrote in the question of the way that the working class is treated by the 1% in this country. The same folks who, and remember, I mean, by example, Louis Gohmert there babbling on about his poor bedraggled constituents who can't afford to buy the Alaskan king crab legs when the welfare peoples in front of them in the grocery store with a whole boogie fool casting aspersions on his asparagus, right? Those kind of folks. You know, the sort of proto-neo-Calvinists who say that, you know, well, we're rich because God loves us more. And that therefore people should be ashamed of not being trillionaires or what have you. Dr. John writes, the same folks who try to shame poor and out-of-work people are the ones who scream for bailouts and who have no problem with weaseling out of their own debts. They're the same ones who insist we're all a bunch of rugged individuals competing with each other in a creepy Darwin-esque game of survivor. In that light, the fact that some of us can reach out to our kin and friends for help is actually a deeply political act. Carve that one in stone. We're gonna at some point in time. I think we're gonna have to get Dr. Johnny's own mountain or something just to carve In that light, the fact that some of us can reach out to our kin and friends for help is actually a deeply political act. It's a rejection of that ideology of constant competition and a recognition that people are stronger together than we are apart. That we got help when we needed it means we're lucky, and for us normal thinking people, it creates a sense of obligation in us to help others in turn when we're able. And any time we do such a thing, it's a small strike against the right wing and its Ayn Rand ethos. And when I read that and forwarded it on to Steve, I realized that what Dr. John was also talking about was the very essence of what we have created here at the Horn. We're not running around out there buying Lear jets or Gulfstreams or any of the things that the for-profit media types do, you know, with one hand tied behind, with half my brain tied behind my back and talent on loan from God, margin call. No. We're trying to create a viable community. And I think that's ever so important. And a question for you this evening. You can tweet it, you can Facebook it, Bob Kincaid in both instances, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. You can send it to me via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Heck, you can call it in. Make it part of the discussion this evening. And that is this. We are internet-based here. But we are very definitely progressive media. And the question is, and I've received, frankly, a lot of emails from people saying, you know, Bob, this listener contribution model is not going to last forever. It can't. It's unsustainable, Bob. And oddly enough, however, it has been sustainable for about 8 years now, or maybe closer to six. We poured what we had into it at first and had some help along the way from, well, God knows, Boss Man Wayne and Gina. That's why we say it's all for you, Gina, every night. And then we had to turn to listener support. Because I'll be damned if I'm going to run a program where we have to take breaks to say, buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold's your best hedge against inflation. Buy gold now. Buy high and sell low, you suckers. Uh-uh. No vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls with hair grown on them by an herbal hair tonic off of a Swedish mattress designed by... No. Because the purpose of this is not to hustle you into buying some product. This is an earnest attempt to create discussion and dialogue that may perhaps lead to a change in attitude, which may perhaps in turn lead to a change in our nation and our world. So, what is the future of progressive radio? How do we build it? How do we make it sustainable? What are we lacking besides, you know, Gulfstream jets and all of that, you know, lobster for breakfast and 28,000 square foot mansions on the Florida shore that you share with a cat and a maid and a wife in a pit? What are we lacking? Your thoughts are more than welcome. And later on, I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. So this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, so defined as being an exploration of the things the right wing does that just feels like, oddly enough, Thorn in the Side. By the way, since we're doing Thorn in the Side Thursday, and since I am here tomorrow, surprise, we will be having, I hope, Friday on the front porch, and Duncan will round up the usual suspects. And if you, too, would like to be a usual suspect, send me your contact information. I'll forward it to Duncan, the long-standing and long-suffering host of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and you can be part of Friday on the front porch. You are more than welcome to do so. But this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and you remember last... I laugh. You remember last night, the clip of Brian Fisher? By the way, I looked up Brian Fisher today. Oh, my Jesus. I think it's time to rethink the continued existence of Stanford University. Because according to that man's biography, Stanford University gave an actual degree to Brian Fisher. Not one of those honorary things. No, the one that, where he's there for 4 years in a very privileged situation. Had to be. I mean, not a lot of underprivileged waifs going to Stanford now, is there? Are there? No, Stanford University actually gave some sort of a degree to Brian Fisher. If that doesn't want to just send you screaming into the night, or depending on where you are, the late afternoon or the early morning, I don't know what will. Stanford? Really? Brick by brick. Let no stone stand on... No. Maybe this was when Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, was running the joint. I don't know. But you may recall that that Stanford-educated human being... Okay, we're playing with the word pretty loosely with human being now. That Stanford-educated individual was opining in a clip yesterday all's about how to go about undemonifying your house when you buy the underwater mortgage and... Right. Yeah, and the oil and the four corners and anointing the stove. Because demons, they're everywhere. I got to follow up with this. Because Brian Fisher is... And I receive questions from time to time about, Bob, why do you focus on the wackos in the right wing? And my initial response is, there's anything else in the right wing? We understand that the right wing contains the entirety of the Republican Party, right? These people are, Brian Fisher out there, when he talks about undemonifying his house, he's speaking for millions of like-minded people. He is an avatar of sorts. And so he is not just Brian Fisher. He is Brian Fisher who is reaffirming the weird superstitions of millions of people in this country. And so it is a sort of a barometer, a taking of a national pulse when we check in with him to find out how to anoint your house with oil and, you know, keep the demons at bay. I wonder what kind of 156-proof rot gut he has to drink to really start seeing the demons. But never mind. So, enter stage, oh my God, extreme right again, Brian Fisher this evening. And he's worried about America. Brian Fisher, the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, thank you very much, is worried about demons. But not just any demons. Now it's not just a matter of dribbling some Crisco on the stove. We've got demon problems all the way to the top. Yeah, we do. He took to the air, Brian Fisher did. And by the way, he and Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt are working in concert to try to shut down Right Wing Watch. RightWingWatch.org, of course, being the go-to place for all of this lunacy. Filing bogus copyright claims on their, the videos that they put out there for people to see. Because they claim, among other things, that they're being taken out of context. But anyway, Brian Fisher got all bent out of shape about something that took place Tuesday at the White House. Ominous music, please. Sorry, you got none. Best I can hope for would be the Morin Monday circus music here. You see, the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, was doing one of those cross-cultural hostess things where we try to create the impression of an America that is welcoming to people of all faiths and no faiths, welcoming of people of all ethnicities, open, diverse society. This does not work for Brian Fisher. this past Tuesday, there was First Lady Michelle Obama hosted an event at the White House to mark the Hindu festival of Diwali. Diwali being the festival of lights in the Hindu religion, which, by the way, is way older than most of the other religions banging around out there. I mean, you know, your major, Christianity wasn't around, Islam wasn't around, and Judaism was still kind of a toddler when the Hindu deities were propagating and profligate like mushrooms after a spring rain. I mean, the Rig Veda is old. And Diwali is the Diwali is the festival of lights that celebrates Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the wife, the goddess wife of Vishnu. Now, of course, these are all imaginary beings. We understand that. But Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth and prosperity. She is the wife of Vishnu. She has many aspects. She is known by many different loves. She has many names. And this got Brian Fisher all in a snit.
Hi, welcome back to Focal Point AFR Talk. Brian Fisher is my name. Welcome to Focal Point, where you get Kevlar for the mind. That's what we provide here, bulletproofing your...
Can't go 30 seconds without some sort of eliminationist rhetoric referencing firearms and bullets. Kevlar for the mind? You know what? He's probably telling the truth. The people that take this clown seriously really are getting their little, and you know, we know that they have larger amygdalas. They've got big lizard brains. They're getting their big lizard brains insulated against learning, against the scholarship of everything that's transpired since the Renaissance, against the wisdom of the ancients, against anything remotely modern. This guy is, as you recall, a purveyor of hatred against gay folks. He's a purveyor of hatred against liberals. You know the drill. So here he comes with his mental Kevlar. And remember, Diwali, Lakshmi. Yeah.
Or mind with the truth of the Word of God. I want to talk about this healthcare latest kind of debacles in the whole healthcare thing. But
well, as they say in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, skip a bit, brother.
Again, encourage you to call 888-5...
Yeah, never mind your phone number either, Brian.
32 pages on Islam, none on Christianity. They are outraged, and they're insisting that students tear out that chapter. Remember that movie Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams, back in the day, back in the 80s? He played this school teacher. He had the kids open up there. The students' this book of poetry.
Hi, I'm Brian Fisher. I just dropped acid. This is my show. Wow! Let's see if we can find the Lakshmi part.
Represents the doctrine of demons. That's what you...
Okay, so I think we're in the neighborhood.
About poetry. These parents saying, look, this is what these students ought to do with this chapter on Islam. Just rip it right out of there. Now, while that's going on, you have Michelle Obama hosting a Hindu festival. Let's see, I think this is in the White House. A Hindu...
That word... I don't think he knows what it means. I don't think it means what he thinks it means. He used the word think. I don't think Brian Fisher's ever thought in his life. Dr. John noticed Kevlar for the mind. That's about the dumbest tagline I've ever heard. But wait, isn't Kevlar a trademark? Does he have to pay the Kevlar company every time he says it? Perhaps the good folks at Kevlar should be made aware of this. Marty noting Kevlar for the mind, breakout Teflon. Remember, Diwali, Festival of Lights, Lakshmi, wife, consort, goddess, imaginary, of course, of Vishnu.
Festival for the goddess of wealth. So we have the First Lady
Notice how the first thing he notices about Lakshmi is that she is the goddess of wealth. Now, these guys are also practitioners of the prosperity gospel. Charming, huh? Maybe that's the source of it. Wait, they've got money. We want all the money. They're muscling in on our hustle, boys.
Hosting a Hindu festival, this is a counterfeit religion.
Stop it. Stop it, Spock. This is a counterfeit religion. Hinduism, which is older by a factor of millennia than whichever version of Christianity it is that Brian Fisher adheres to. And by, I don't mean like Methodist or Lutheran or Presbyterian or Baptist. I mean Arian, Athanasian, Gnostic. Because, see, that's one of the things you have to understand. From the moment that they got the claw hammer out and took the nails out of Jesus, they started fighting amongst each other about what their brand new faith meant. But whatever it is, Hinduism is a rock solid couple of thousand years older. So he's really in no position to declare what is and isn't counterfeit now, is he? Of course, he's in no position to declare what time of day it is. The guy's insane.
It's an Eastern religion. It is, in essence, an...
Eastern religion? You mean like Boston? Oh, no wonder it's terrible. Liberals?
Occult religion.
Oh, it's an occult religion. Occult meaning dark? Jim noticed the Kevlar reference, too. Kevlar? Tinfoil would be more appropriate, no? I think you can't see it on his little videos, Jim. I think Brian Fisher's tinfoil helmet is installed under his incredibly immaculate, perfect hair.
It's a counterfeit, a false alternative to Christianity. It ultimately...
How can it be a false alternative to Christianity when it's older by a factor of millennia than Christianity? Wouldn't that mean that Christianity is an alternative to, you know, conditions precedent and all of that stuff that apparently they don't teach at Stanford anymore?
It represents the doctrine of demons. That's what you have.
Wait. You knew they were going to be demons. It's no fun listening to Brian Fisher unless there are demons. Hinduism, wait.
Lady, hosting a Hindu festival, this is a counterfeit religion. It's an Eastern religion. It is, in essence, an occult religion. It's a counterfeit, a false alternative to Christianity. It ultimately represents the doctrine of demons. That's what you have with Hinduism. And now this has been celebrated in the White House with a Hindu festival. Here is CNSNews.com. First Lady Michelle Obama is hosting an event on Tuesday to mark the Hindu festival, that's today, of Diwali, or the Festival of Lights, and President Obama has participated in this over the last couple of years.
Well, of course he has. He's a Hindu Kenyan Muslim.
To honor Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth and prosperity. That's just the name for a demon.
That's just the name for it. And like I said, this would be hilarious. This would be earth-shatteringly funny were it not for the fact that there are millions of people sitting out there nodding their little heads. Yes, Brother Brian. Yes. Marvelline, they're having demon parties at our White House. That black man in our White House is having demon parties. Yeah, I mean, you'll know they've been successful when the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man comes walking down Pennsylvania Avenue, right?
You know, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10, you go into a pagan temple and you actually participate in a ritual in honor of one of these gods. You might see some kind of statue up there that doesn't move and doesn't speak, but that statue represents a demon. Behind that is a demon. And
because, you know, there really are demons in the world. And leprechauns, and unicorns, and hillbillies, hobbits, elves, dwarves, lizards. They're all real. They're all just right there. Yes.
And Paul says, I don't want you to partake of the cup of demons, of the table of demons. So don't go in there. Don't participate. So this Lakshmi,
This Lakshmi, like, you know, she's two blocks down.
Just the name of a demon now that has been invited into the White House by the First Lady.
I guess this is not the time to mention that maybe some of the earliest sayings of Christ Jesus, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, have a lot in common with Indian religion. No, this wouldn't be the time.
I'm just trying to picture what Right Wing Watch is going to do with this. They will, they'll have fun.
You know, I will know I have arrived when Brian Fisher says, get a cough button, Brian. I just wonder what Bob Kincaid's going to do. You old fool.
And knock yourself out, boys.
Well, but no, because they can't. Well, they did, but apparently, Brian Fisher went crying to YouTube to file a phony, baloney, bogus claim of copyright infringement, which, by the way, this clearly is not. There is within the realm of copyright law something called fair use, in which one may excerpt portions of other people's work in order to comment upon it. And there's nothing in the law of copyright that says that it has to be a favorable comment. But we're not done. You know, remember yesterday. We can't possibly be done.
Now, Hindus celebrate by placing small earthenware oil lamps called diyas in their homes.
Which is probably Hindu for small earthenware lamp, but it's... You know, in Brian Fisher's weird little world, it's, you know, something demonic. Demon lamps. I mean, didn't them Hindus invent that yogurt? Where they sit with their legs all bent up and everything? Demons. Let's hear more about the lamps, Brian.
Help the goddess find her way. What kind of a goddess? What kind of a goddess needs help finding her way home? What kind of a god is that? But that's who the Hindus worship.
Yeah, what kind of a little demigod needs cookies and milk left out so that he can find his way down the chimney on December 25th, the birthday of Mithras and or Jesus, depending on which one you're with. Yeah.
In India, Hindus will leave the windows and doors of their houses open so that Lakshmi can come in.
And since the arrival of Christianity in India, they can't do that anymore because the Christians come in and steal everything that's not nailed down.
So you open the windows, open the doors to invite Lakshmi, this demon god, to come into your house. And that's what Michelle Obama is doing today in the White
House. God, he's even a misogynist with a... Lakshmi has been demoted from goddess to god. Please, she's also, by the way, the goddess of beauty. She's often depicted wearing red.
You know, the passage this reminded me of when I read that story this morning was from Ezekiel chapter 8. If you remember that, Ezekiel is taken by the Lord in the spirit to the city of Jerusalem.
Or some say by a UFO. Oh, never mind.
To see the kind of abominations that were being carried out in the house of God in Jerusalem. And here is the segment I want to read to you. So he tells Ezekiel, look, I want you to dig a hole in the wall so you can go in there and see what's being done.
So God is telling Ezekiel to burglarize the temple. Right, got it.
In this place, go in and see the vile abominations that they are committing here. So I went in and saw, and there engraved on the wall all around.
Lakshmi?
Was every form of creeping things and loathsome beasts and all the idols.
Now understand, Ezekiel didn't actually do this. Ezekiel hallucinated this, just to be clear. Because this is a vision from the same God that the folks over in Hindu lands would consider to be a demon. Do you see the source of the problem here?
Of the house of Israel. And then the Lord says, look, they've defiled this place with all of these depictions of these false gods. This isn't even the worst that they've done. Let me show you what else they have done. So that's going on this day in the White House. You know, one of the things I suggested in a tweet last week is that what we need to do is we need to elect a president, a Christian president in 2016, who will bring clergy together to go through the White House and purify that place.
That's the part I was waiting for. Brian Fisher thinks that we're going to have to need a bunch of snake handling, tongue speaking, floor rolling, strychnine swigging, fundamentalist freaks go through the White House and go brooga 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 brooga, and chase out all the demons. Because, you know, those black people in our White House, those Kenyan Muslim anti-colonials, Hindus, done brought in a bunch of demons. It's a beautiful thing. Not. Marty goes right to the heart of the matter. Brian Fisher is obviously remembering what he saw in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and is thinking as fact. Kalimar, Kalimar. Oh, what's the chant that makes the heart pop out of the chest? Marty will know. Dr. John with a couple of observations. If Hinduism is a counterfeit religion, then Christianity is what? A religion made of monopoly money? The F is he talking about? Dude's lining himself up to get reincarnated as a guinea worm. Trust me. Don't look it up. Just trust me. You don't want to be a guinea worm. Dr. John also asking, what kind of God needs a lamp? Well, Brian, a God that is invented to be a lot like a human, subject to our same passions and foibles, and thus requiring a lot of honor and respect, unlike the God of the people of the book, who is remote and fundamentally different from humans, and thus only approachable through arcane rituals requiring powerful people to tell you what to do. Right out of the park. Ron and Raleigh. Bob, perhaps he could get Piyush Jindal to exorcise them rascals. That's true, because Piyush Jindal, governor of Louisiana, does confess to having participated in exorcisms. And we haven't heard from our buddy Philip in a while. Subject line, Wild Man Fisher. Listening to Brian Fisher makes me realize that I should have taken humongous amounts of acid and read the Bible rather than attend college. To think, I could be babbling nonsensically about demons and lions and tigers and bears on some radio network instead of wondering why mental constipation always accompanies oral diarrhea. Toaster. Poor Brian. He heard Diwali was the Festival of Lights and became convinced that it was created by yet another Obama-supported green energy company. Irish Dave. Indiana Jones is not a documentary. Who knew? Jim, after W, they had to call Orkin and an Army chemical detachment. And they still didn't get the moles that Dick Cheney promised that he had left. Irish Dave also noting, but Bob, Coot McCain said we are all middle caste now, my friend. Okay, and this from Kate. Please dial it down, regarding Fisher's absurd remarks. True, it was off the wall. However, when you make a farce of spiritual cleansing, you're insulting those who practice the craft, and those First Nation folks who you have such an affinity for. When we cleanse, it is not necessarily to get rid of demons, but to quiet the existing spirits who linger. I often hesitate to be critical of your diatribes, but I couldn't let this one go. Let me clear this up. At the time that Christianity arose on the world scene, squabbling and squawking and killing each other and follow the gourd, no follow the sandal, all of that, it certainly cannot be said that the ancient world had lived in peace and harmony. They warred like the dickens. But the one thing that was absent from the ancient world was religious warfare. And that's the whole point here, is that when Brian Fisher is out there babbling about demons, this is all dog whistle code to right-wing religion industry evangelical fundamentalists who represent a rock-solid millions of Americans who are actually allowed to vote. Religious warfare had not existed in the ancient world until Christianity taught them how to do it. And when Brian Fisher talks about chasing demons out, well, it's the same thing. It's kind of like the same thing as the celebration of St. Patrick's Day, which celebrates the driving of the serpents from Ireland, which never had serpents in the first place. The serpents are the old religion that Kate kind of obliquely refers to. You know, I made a reference last night that if I had the cultural grounding and cultural right to do it, I would probably smudge in this studio before every program. You know, just hedging bets, just to create a cleansing, healthy space. I'll check into that next time I'm up that way. Hey, guys, would it be okay if I smudge? Teach me to do it right. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I say that with all reverence and honor. But whether it be the Wiccans or the and I don't even want to call it faith, the animistic structures of Native and Indigenous peoples, none of those things are predicated upon being at war with everybody else's faith. These right-wing evangelical fundamentalists are at war with anybody who does not believe the way they wish or they are determined the rest of us should believe. Remember, this is Brian Fisher, a guy who wants to kill all the grizzly bears. And me, you know, I'm kind of in Dr. John's camp on this. I find, you know, there are beautiful special things to be found in faith practices. There's a certain magnificence in the incense and the bells and the lights and the whistles and the chanting and everything of a midnight Christmas mass in a Catholic church or in a Greek Orthodox church. All these things have certain traditional beauties to them. But that all gets lost when it is underpinned by a desire to wipe out and compel belief in everyone else who doesn't particularly subscribe to their particular system. Oh, and by the way, via our friends at Right Wing Watch, it is worth noting that don't tell them, but that fine, upstanding, God-fearing Christian President George W. Bush, he hosted, and presumably Laura hosted, Diwali receptions too. But when the black guy does it, oh well, because, you know, they just carry demons with them naturally. So it's just kind of a starting place. By the way, totally separate piece of information. I mentioned yesterday that Ron Paul Goatwig Boy, Rand Paul Goatwig Boy, son of Ron Paul, praiser of black market butchers, no, really, had lost his gig at the Washington Times because, even for the Washington Times, owned by the Reverend Moon outfit. No, really. was just a little too plagiaristic for them. But you know what? If you are a right-winger, there's always an infrastructure out there to pick you up, dust you off, and set you back on the road to weirdness all over again. So it came as no surprise to me to find out earlier today that, lo and behold, Rand Paul, Goatwig Boy, has a new gig. Whatever it was that he was cutting and pasting into a column for the Washington Times, and yes, he cut and pasted his columns for the Washington Times, he will now cut and paste for Breitbart. Because the world needs to see the brilliance of the cut and paste skills of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Or, as we like to call him for short, Daffy Duck. I'm rich, I'm socially secure. I may be a coward, but I'm a greedy coward. So, and this, because we are forever stunning our friends up over in Australia. This from Robert. Demons? Seriously? Bob, it's 2013. We look out across space and can see back in time 13 billion years. We can move individual atoms and use them to spell out IBM. We've been to the moon and have people living permanently in space on the International Space Station. And this clown is still going on about demons? I fear so much that we are heading for another dark age. By the way, my favorite Indian holiday is Holi, H-O-L-I, the Festival of Colors. People wander the streets throwing colored powder at each other. It's very pretty. See, if Christianity had anything like that, they'd wander the streets throwing rocks at each other. Oh, Lord. We call it Thorn in the Side Thursday for a reason. Darn fine reasons, as far as I'm concerned. Because if it's a thorn in the side of a country that is still trying to be reasonably successful, it's a thorn that is about the size of a spear point. You know, I did follow-up on Monday of, you know, rotten crap that happened over Halloween, like the lady who dressed her kid up as a noble lumpkin of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Well, I don't see white stays with white and black stays. I don't see no problem with that. I forgot to mention the really creepy folks who rewarded little trick-or-treaters. Yeah, imagine, they're so cute. As noted, my grandchildren were absolutely adorable. The Ninja Turtle, the Superman, and the Batman Princess. And when I read the story about the little children, little tiny 2-year-old ballerinas in their tutus and little tiny Perry the Platypus, and they walk up to the door, "Happy Halloween, you little cretins. Here, you ever heard of abortion?" No, really. That's what these freaks were doing. The anti-abortion goobers were handing out graphic photos of aborted fetuses on Halloween to little children who were only trying to get candy. Again, a further example of the fact that if you ain't thinking like they're thinking, by default, you're thinking wrong. Then, of course, there's the woman in Florida who on September 11th, a teacher, mind you, a teacher in a public school, a teacher in Florida who insisted that her little Jehovah's Witness student stand up and say the pledge or leave the country. Not kidding. Happened. She said that she had been told that she couldn't foist her religion off on people on holidays, but she said, it was September 11th, and I figured we all needed to say the pledge. So I told them that they couldn't pledge allegiance to America, that they needed to leave America. And made the little Jehovah's Witness boy, and we'll leave all of that alone for the moment, made the little Jehovah's Witness boy stand up, put his hand, she physically took hold of his hand and physically put it over his heart and made him say the Pledge of Allegiance. Even though, I think it's U.S. versus Barnett, isn't that it? 1940-something arose out of here in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia, before it was almost level? Where the Supreme Court unequivocally said, no, sorry, you can't force people to take oaths or say the pledge. And lo and behold, it was brought by Jehovah's Witnesses, too, because they get kind of testy about that. They're more than happy to interrupt your daily life by knocking on your... Have you read The Watchtower? But they don't want to be forced to say the pledge. And, well, under the Constitution, you can't force them. Unless, of course, you're a grade school teacher in Florida who is... pretty sure she's not a liberal. Then there's Minnesota. This thorn in the side Thursday. Minnesota. Where George Nathaniel is a 49-year-old bus driver, according to Gawker. He drives bus for the Burnsville, Minnesota School District. He was driving bus for the Burnsville, Minnesota School District because he's already been reassigned once because he's also a pastor. And he spends his entire bus route praying out loud and encouraging the other children to pray. He said he sees absolutely nothing wrong with it. We start off with a song. I probably got the wrong accent, don't I? We start out with a song. Then each person will pray if they want to pray. If they don't want to pray... Oh, wait a minute. No. Oh, let me check here. Oh, he's driven bus in Georgia. I had the right accent after all. We start out with a song. Then each person will pray if they want to pray. If they don't want to pray, they don't have to pray. Then I will pray and ask them if they want to join me in a prayer. Just give them something constructive and positive to go to school with. Almost drive me to pray. Dear Jesus, please make Nathaniel great. Please make George Nathaniel, the bus driver, quit praying and pay attention to the freaking road. There's crazy people out there on the road, and these are our precious little children. So he was warned about it, told not to do it, kept on doing it. Why? We got to get Christians to be able to be Christians and not have to be closet Christians. You have something good, you're going to share it with somebody. Anybody want to guess where his bus route took him through? Anybody? Bueller? Yeah, took him through the Muslim neighborhood. So he's been bounced again. He says... Well, when I drove the buses in Wisconsin and Georgia, no one ever complained about my behavior. And no parents have personally complained to me. Right, because you're going to come up and confront the bus driver who's driving your child to school and could do God knows what to them between pickup and drop-off. And drop-off? And so he started a campaign, he started a movement, looking for other preachers to defend him against the persecution. He's being persecuted. On. And on and on. Then there's the school in Kansas. KCTV with a report about a 13-year-old boy who got suspended yesterday from school because he was carrying a very colorful Vera Bradley purse. I guess they don't allow European courier satchels at the Anderson County Senior Junior School in Kansas, Stan. They called him to the office and said, "Son, you're going to have to take the purse off." That was Assistant Principal Don Hilliard. And young Skylar Davis said, "Well, I'm not going to." "Well, that's all right, then. We're going to suspend you. We're going to call your mama." Leslie Willis is the mama. She said, "I was a little furious, and I called the school and spoke to Hilliard to verify the story, and yeah, he refused to take off his Vera Bradley bag. Nothing more to do it. Skylar has been going to school since August with that same Vera Bradley bag on. Hasn't taken it off. What's the problem?" Incidentally, there is no rule in the school handbook about shoulder bags, because the story calls it a purse. It's got a long shoulder strap. It goes diagonally from one shoulder to the other hip. It's really colorful. And so what? Skylar Davis pointed out that girls at the school are never punished for wearing their purses. It was a one-day suspension. But Skylar Davis is standing for his rights, and he says, "I'm not going back until they agree to treat me equally. It's a matter of self-expression." Meanwhile, backing up for all they're worth, the superintendent of schools said, "Nobody gets to bring their purse to school. We're applying these rules equally." Bull. Ain't no let up. Not at all. So here we are. Here endeth the filibobster. It is 2 minutes before the hour. And thanks going out to Philip for helping out along the way this evening, taking us to $70 of our $150 Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Much appreciated, Philip. So, 80 more bucks. And Shirley will be happier than you can imagine. We will. We'll take a break. And light up the lines, 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. We call what we do here Conversation Radio, and you're what makes it that. I'm Bob Kincaid. subject matter, a bumper like that is almost inescapable. The Jefferson Starship, Miracles. Yeah. Gosh, I love that song so much more than We Built This City. I really can't express it. Back to the email for just a minute. Philip with a note. Bus driver prayers. All this time I thought when the late, great Lou Reed sang, "You need a busload of faith to get by," he was waxing metaphorically. Who knew he was talking about heading to school in Georgia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota? Well, that's why we probably have to start saying peace be upon him when we get done saying Lou Reed, because it turns out he was a prophet. They're all over the place, those prophets. Ron and Raleigh. Is the principal a member of the fashion police? I guess so now. And Dr. John with the praying on the bus, noting, isn't that a church-state issue? If directed prayer in schools is forbidden, then shouldn't directed prayer on school buses also run into constitutional trouble? Yes! But see, he's getting, well, I wasn't making them pray. They was free not to pray, and then I guess the good little Christians would beat the snot out of the kid who wasn't praying because they'd know he was a heathen. Oh, God. Thank you, Marty. I will note this email for future reference, but I will not repeat the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom yanking the heart out of the chest thing. Right. There are some things that my agnosticism simply will not fool with. Up with which I will not. What, oh, never mind. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
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 My goodness gracious, Juanita.
How you doing, kid?
I'm so tickled to death to hear from you.
I'm called in to gripe.
Yes, yes, what have I done?
But I want to say, I love that song. I just love that song.
Isn't it lovely?
You said that was Jefferson Airplane?
Well, this is after they transferred to Jefferson Starship.
Anyway, that's a wonderful song.
They got a new ride.
Yeah. Now, I'm so perturbed, I'm so weary, I'm so angry, I'm so horrified, I am so disgusted. What else can I say about all these? What are they coming out of the woodwork?
I like to think of them coming out from behind the baseboards like cockroaches, but, you know, that's me.
That's a good one. And I've come up with mine because a lot of them claim to be Christians, you know. And I've come up, I think they're served, I call them, and I think I'm original. I don't think I'm taking a load from this. You know, I'm not a Rand Paul look-alike or wax-alike or whatever.
No, and henceforward, anytime that we think...
In person.
Right. You're not a plagiarist.
Right. But anyway, I think I did this on my own. But I'm calling the servants of the Antichrist.
I think that, you know, with... Insofar as 99% of what they say is contrary to the teachings of, yeah, I'd say that they are.
When they say that they are, like, you see, like, what's his face on Fox, the big shot, just writing all these books, and he's wrote a book.
Oh, Mike Huckabee?
Well, oh, God, forget him.
Sorry. Wrong hustler?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the one that is supposed to be making the most money. Maybe that's...
Oh, the life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity?
Well, that's close. You're getting closer. Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. See, he's a historian now.
He has a nerve to say he's a Christian. I mean, of course they all do, don't they?
Well, sure.
But...
And they wouldn't. Then they wouldn't know him if he stepped up and introduced himself.
But they're not... If they are claiming that, then I got news for them. But anyway, I'm just so demoralized sometimes. I tell you, because it's like every day you don't know what you're going to be faced with. You know, they're such liars.
Well, you and I, Juanita, we come from a culture where we've got a phrase, the truth ain't in them.
Right.
Yeah.
And who are they talking about in the Bible?
Well, that's why I call them evangelicals.
And you remember, you know that Elizabeth's over there now.
Yes.
And she said, "Oh, I feel so at home. Oh my God!" And she's with working with that.
Well, now she, you know, now she's not going to be threatened and bullied by that mean Whoopi Goldberg.
Well, I'll tell you. But anyway, beside the point.
Well, I have to tell you, you immediately got fan mail.
Really?
Yes. Dr. John just wrote, and he said, "So good to hear from Juanita. She's made my whole week. My best to her."
Well, I'm still working on my roof.
Lord, I tell you what, I
Did you ever get yours fixed?
No. There's a plan. But
well,
we had a lot of rain come through last night, and
really,
yeah.
We had rain all summer, and hot, you know. And then, you know, my neighbor threatened to blow my son's brains out with her gun.
I remember that.
And also, she told, I confronted her because she'd get out every time she'd see me, you know, and just talk real loud. So I started talking back to her. But she said that I had no idea what she had in store for me. You know, she wouldn't tell me because she was going to blow my brains. But I told her, I said, "You just itching to pull that trigger." And she didn't deny it.
Oh, don't please, Juanita, don't needle the lawful, awful gun owners, please.
But listen, people say, "Oh, did you tell the cops?" I said, "You know what they said? She's got a right to her own opinion."
and a right to stand her ground.
Oh yeah. But anyway, so we've been having to build a fence, too. And, my son's disabled. Of course, she mocked him. She said, "Oh, I got pictures. I'm going to, ruin him." But now she's talking to him, you know. She won't talk to me. She said, "I push her buttons."
Is it a demon thing, Juanita? Do you have demons, Juanita?
Well, I won't talk about that, Bob.
I understand.
Not the way you're talking. Not the way that guy is, no.
I understand.
But anyway, yeah, it's too deep a subject for me to explain. But anyway, I would say if anybody is demonic, it's her. And her husband said, "Well, that's just the way she is. She just does it. That's the way she is."
That's because the poor guy's been putting up with it longer than you have.
Well, we thought for a while it was a poor guy, but we think he likes that. And then her folks has got money, so I think maybe.
It's amazing how the fog lifts and everything becomes clear.
But anyway, I don't know, Bob, I'll tell you. And I'm the one that got the biggest brunt of it all, over nothing, over absolutely nothing. And
well, I hope y'all are making progress on your roof, and it's a shame you had to build the fence.
Well, the fence is almost finished, but Charles is trying to really do a good job, and the people come by here and say, "Oh, it's just gorgeous," you know. But putting up the gates and stuff like that, you know, that's what he's got to do now. And now they're working on our roads. But anyway, people think, you know, when you get old and feeble and all that kind of stuff, you don't have nothing to do. But believe me, I got plenty to do.
Not in this country. No, there's no let up. It's.
And then another thing every day, when are they going to take away our Social Security? When are they going to take this? Like, all this stuff we get free. I like to get stuff free. I don't care. I'll admit it.
Yeah, because you never worked or anything for your Social Security. It's just free. It's just Juanita's free money, right?
You know what? You know what? There's look at, you get more money than you pay in. Yeah, look at all the things that they bet on at Wall Street that we can't get into.
And isn't that the very principle of Wall Street? You get more money out than you pay in.
Right,
but see, it's kind of like what Dr. John said at the front end of the program. That's okay for them.
Oh yeah, you're so right. But that guy that you were talking about, I had to. Some of it I laughed about, and some of it I just thought, "Oh my God!" But I went to a church like that.
And yet you still got your sanity.
Well, you know, I didn't get involved like I could have. They wanted me to, and nothing would work out. So I think God was protecting me from all that.
Saving you from his followers?
Not his followers, I don't think.
Well, it always reminds me of, because hearing Brian Fisher go on and on about Hindus, kind of wanted me. Brian, buddy, Gandhi was a Hindu. Was he a demon too? Should he have just gone home? And,
I'm sure he thinks so.
Yeah, but it was Gandhi who said, "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ."
Absolutely, absolutely. I totally agree, Bob. You know I do. You know, I don't go to church anymore.
But you know, I mean, you've been in these circumstances, Juanita. You know, there. Every time that Brian Fisher opens his mouth, or Pat Robertson, or any of these other fundamentalist evangelical freaks, there are millions of people who go, "Yep, he's absolutely right."
Oh yeah, yeah. I wrote a little something about that. You want to hear it?
Absolutely.
Let me see if I can find it. Give me just a little second. I won't take too much more time. No, my heart is always with you, Bob. You know that.
Well, we worry when we don't hear for a while. I see you on Facebook and stuff.
That's my young... Yeah, I'm on Facebook. That's a good step on there, isn't there?
Oh, sure.
I had a friend that I grew up with, and she found out I voted for Obama, and she said, "I just can't understand you do that. You don't have any..."
You don't love America.
What has the man done to you? You know, she had a good life. She had one of the best marriages, and you know, she doesn't know what it's like out in the real world. You know, people like that, they just don't know.
No.
You know.
But you said you got something written down there?
Yep. Just a second.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about, I think Judas sent me an email about some kind of apparel you can wear to keep from being raped.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've actually got that in the stack.
Well, I answered her back. I think I sent you a copy.
Yes.
Of it. Just give me just a second. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're doing fine. In the meantime.
Here.
I'm sorry?
I'm here.
Okay. Well, I was going to tell you, in the meantime, you just got a note in from Kate. She says...
Oh, hey, Kate.
She says, "Hey. Hey, sister, I've been thinking about you for the longest time. I'm wondering what happened with the threat over the coral snake. Sounds like your neighbor's still a thorn in your side."
That's what it's about, yeah.
Oh, is it still the coral snake?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was all about. I didn't do nothing except go over and ask if they found a snake. And I told my son, I said, "I got jumped on way more than you did."
Well, you know, Kate says, "It sounds like your neighbor's still a thorn in your side. Consider her an angel for you to practice your faith on. As they say down yonder, bless her heart, God love her. And and give my best to Charles," Kate says.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet.
And then she closes, Kate does. She says, "Getting old ain't for sissies."
And she is still doing good works, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, I said, "What are the clothes that many Islam women are forced to wear? The one that nothing but the eyes are visible."
Right, the burqa.
"God forbid someone is turned on by their eyes. These women are raped and then beat till they have no meat on their back because it's their fault. Those kind of clothes would require a huge size of material, and I'm sure somebody makes a ton of money on them. I've heard many women in our country who believe that the women are at fault for being raped, sometimes for what they wear. And if they were modestly dressed, then sure, they asked for it. So now the ones who claim they want no law like the right-wing Muslims, they have slowly been subtly passing laws over here to suit their vile prejudices. Now they are more overt in their desires to put women where they belong, speeding up the disgusting and cruel laws against women. Remember, these servants of the Antichrist here in our country are only in approval of real Americans who claim Christianity. I say variety is the spice of life. How boring our country would be without the wonderful blending and the opening of our minds of those with other ethos different from ours. And what about the American Indian? White people could have learned so much from them, from their beliefs, their high respect for nature. But no, they've shoved it all aside at their loss, and they don't even comprehend it. They don't express any embarrassment about what they've done to the Indians, the Africans, the Chinese, the Hispanics, and yes, the poor white people. All they say to them, you may be poor, but at least you're not black, and you have a superiority of being white. And many say, oh, yes, I see, oh, great white bosses. You have your money because you deserve it, and I'm so dumb and so lucky to serve you. Sad to say. The cruel monsters that are lifting up their vileness, more and more of them, I believe they're far worse than those they berate as towel heads. And if they keep on accomplishing what they want, God only knows what this country will be like in just a few years.
Well, you know, it was just a couple of minutes ago, Juanita, that I had the email, and I forget who it was, that said, I fear we are moving back into the Dark Ages.
Yeah, I heard that.
Well,
I heard that.
You know, there's truth in that. Because consider this story that you mentioned a moment ago. And it's not a joke. It's for real. A company in New York wants to raise $50,000 startup capital to sell anti-rape underwear.
That's what I think Jude was talking about.
Yeah. It's got cut-proof, lockable straps to keep the underwear on the woman to keep her from getting raped.
Oh, my God.
And, Juanita, the first thing that crossed my mind when I read this was, oh, look, we've traveled back 1,000 years in time to the chastity belt.
I thought that, too. That came to my mind when you said that.
And the fact of the matter is, your comparison of this with a burqa is highly appropriate. But in both instances, I think I've got a much simpler idea.
Okay.
Let's teach men to stop raping women.
Well, that's a good idea.
But, see, we've got an entire political party that in the 2012 election cycle ran around trying to justify rape. Remember? Forcible rape, and
right.
and who was that politician that said, well, some women just rape real easy?
Yeah, and if you don't feel anything, you're not, I mean, if you're really raped, you're not going to get pregnant.
Right, because
really raped.
Yeah, God has, and you know, they'll run a rape kit and that, holy mackerel. And so the simplest thing is to create a culture in which rape is not acceptable.
Right.
But we've got a good rock-solid 40% of this country that thinks that sometimes it's just dandy.
Well, and like I talk about those women, and usually they're right-wing women that think, well, the women are at fault, too.
Sure.
There's a lot of women like that that are vicious. But I got one more sentence on here, and then I say they're traitors, take away their citizenship, and exile them. Let them have their own country, but not part of ours like they're trying to do in Colorado.
Exactly.
And I owe this to Yink Yeager. Get out of here, you covered graves.
You covered graves.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Juanita, it is awful good hearing from you. Don't be such a stranger, you hear?
Good talking to you, too.
All right, you take care. Say hi to Charles for us.
I sure will, and you take care.
All right, bye now.
And send my love to a Ferg.
I sure will.
Where is that kid?
Oh, he's in it. Well, he's not feeling real good right now. The rest of the house is busy having a bout of some sort of intestinal flu or something that I'm desperately trying not to come down with.
Oh, no, that's bad. Okay.
And by the way, you got a note from Jude. She said, truly my sister. You go, girl.
Okay.
We'll see you, Juanita.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Night-night.
And that is none other. Haven't heard from her in a long time. That's none other than our very own Juanita down in Florida. We'll keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Kevin. What's happening?
Well, I'm kind of calling starting out, or at least Juanita captured it for me with the start of her call, where she just totally aggravated and fed up and every other adjective you can use. But she also said something that really struck me, and I forget exactly how she said it, but she said something about we live in the real world, and that's what these people, right-wing evangelicals, don't do. People don't understand. They deny the existence of, or something, living in the real world. It's kind of like the anti-rape underwear. That's not real world, like you're saying. The best way to do it would be to stop people from raping. But instead, we come out with something supposedly that'll stop you from being raped.
Right, but isn't there? Doesn't that just have an aspect of anti-rape underwear? Isn't that blaming the woman again? More?
Exactly. And I'm wondering what kind of underwear is it? Is it Kevlar? Because yeah, the straps may be cut-proof, but I don't know of any woman that's going to be real comfortable with the chastity belt on, and that's essentially what it is. And, you know, I couldn't imagine being stuck wearing a pair of underwear like that, say, for an 8-hour work shift or something like that. And it just, you know, it even goes as far as people blaming the victim for rape or whatever crime it is. They don't live in the real world. They want to believe that the world is like this. They want to have their belief of the world, and they don't want to even be challenged on what their belief of the world is, if that makes any sense. It boggles my mind. It's you know, I tell the story, and before I say that, I do want to say how well Juanita sounded, for lack of a better word. She sounded very, compared to the last time I heard her, she sounded wonderful. So maybe,
that's the thing.
Cool thing.
I think Juanita taps into a tremendous well of strength, and
yeah.
she's indomitable, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Well, you've almost got to be in this day and age, because it's a challenge for her or me to have any sort of faith. And I don't even know where I define mine now, somewhere between atheist and Christian, and I don't know what you would call that. But when I hear someone like Brian Fisher trying to define for me what Christianity is, knowing what the words of Jesus were...
I mean, did Brian Fisher just take Stanford... Kevin, did Brian Fisher just take Stanford University, single-handedly take Stanford University out of the ranks of America's elite institutions of higher learning? Can you imagine Stanford, for heaven's sake, Stanford, giving that guy a degree in so much as basket weaving? I'm horrified.
Well,
but then again, you know, Harvard gave a dim leader an MBA. But
well, if you've got enough money, I imagine the classes are a whole lot easier to take than if you don't have the money. And I don't guess that's true all the time, but I got a feeling in the case of Dim Leader it was. You know?
Yeah,
and I don't doubt
those
that,
legacy admissions.
Do what?
Those legacy admissions? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
That 1% affirmative action?
Well, in Bush's case, what would that 1% be, though? You have to give a certain amount of really dumb people a degree, you know? I mean, degrees are supposed to be earned, not given. And even if you got money, I would hope that the guy you're turning out onto the rest of us would at least have some basic working knowledge of life in some sort of fashion other than what Bush had, because, you know, this guy was just clueless from day one and still is. And I don't imagine Brian Fisher's too far behind, although the one thing I'll say for Brian Fisher is I truly believe he doesn't believe a word of what he's saying, too. It's all about money. And as long as he can keep those people who are sending him money to protect the American family and freedom...
Yeah, from the Homer sectionals.
Right on stand. Right. Right, because that's obviously our major problem in society today is what someone else does in the privacy of their own bedroom. So,
Yeah, because when you've got time to worry, when you got time to worry about that, Kevin, then that means world hunger's been solved, world peace has been achieved, because you're really down to the boring stuff.
Right, exactly. So, I did want to mention, you talked about that, at the start of the show, you were talking about what we're lacking. And I don't know what you've come up with that or if anybody sent in any emails on that in so far. I don't think we're lacking anything other than the money.
Show me the money. Yeah, I know.
Right, exactly. But
and thanks for getting us started this evening. I really appreciate that. We all do.
Yep. I was thinking, what do we... how can we make that different? I did... it's $250 a night you try to raise, right?
$150.
Well, that's even better. I figured it on the $250 model over 25 days and then divided. That's the variable. How many listeners you have on any given day or week. And I came out with, if you had 500 listeners, that would come out to roughly $13.50 per week that someone...
Oh, but see, that's the trouble.
Per week, per month.
That's the trouble with the contribution model. There's a lot more than 500 listeners. A lot more.
I know, but I'm just going on that variable, and that's $13.50 per month that 500 regular listeners would have to donate. Now, if it's only $150 per night, that's obviously half of that. So I know that PayPal, they've got where you can do the monthly donations now.
Yeah, the subscription.
But I guess that's where I stop, because I never want to make it where it's a suggested donation or...
Right, and, well, yeah, because any of that would totally violate the entire spirit of the community we're trying to build here. Because, you know, some people contribute more, some people contribute less. Everybody contributes what they can, even when people can't. That's what people can do.
Right.
And we do this recognizing that people who... everybody is making sure that there's never a price tag hanging in front of the podcast, that there's never a pay now in front of stream access. I don't have the answers. I know that we've managed to exist this long, and this is not part of an outreach or a pitch or a request or anything like that. Trying to figure out how do we go forward, and not just the horn.
No, but if you, you know, we, lots of people have talked about it. If you could have a sustainable, for lack of a better word, a regular, I guess is a better word, model of how much you're going to bring in per month, and know that no thick or thin, you're going to get that X amount of money per month. And I think it would have to be over that $150 a night even, just to cover unexpected expenses, that kind of thing.
Well, look, what we try to do is, and again, this is an attempt to create a model that isn't based on anybody's need to own a Gulfstream jet.
Right.
Or, you know, a 28,000 square foot mansion with a maid, a cat, and a wife in a pit. This is an attempt to be sustainable and to build community. And so, I honestly don't know. So, you know, we'll keep thinking on it and keep pondering it, I guess.
Well, that's kind of why I brought it up, because I kind of want to bring up like a focus group kind of thing. You know, everybody pitch in your ideas and go from there, but it's almost like you've got to do that, of have a focus group kind of time to actually, you know, really talk the issue out, hash out what, the Kickstarter idea, I think, is a good one.
Well, and that's going to, I think that's going to have to happen down the road. I'm actually, but that's not a way, to keep this all alive. That's a way to make it possible for this to keep going.
Right.
And, you know, I'll say more about that later once we've gotten it firmed up. I know nothing about running a Kickstarter campaign. Absolutely freaking nothing. Okay. So, you know, one of, and that's a problem. I have a learning curve there, to traverse. But I have certain goals for that, and one of them is to once and for all, and I'm working with a member of the Horn Family Commune on this, figure out how to do it once and for all, get the Horn off the grid. Because we will be, if we can do it, and I'm saying it publicly, so somebody, the minute I say this, somebody will, you know, go and get some of that elusive, vast liberal money to do it with, and they'll be the first, but I would like for the Horn to be the first progressive radio program that can say that no mountains were blown up, no communities were poisoned, no birth defects were fostered, no heart disease was promoted, no cancer was seeded in the making of this program. The unfortunate side of that is, as I currently understand it, it would be an almost insurmountable Kickstarter campaign. Just to get the Horn off the grid. So, but
almost,
you know,
insurmountable. I wouldn't call it insurmountable though, because even there I think off the top of my head of say various groups that you might want to tap into for knowledge of how to do that to begin taking.
Well, it's not a knowledge thing. I'm working with somebody who really, really knows it all the way down to the ground how to do this. I mean, knows who the suppliers are, knows what's going to be required, knows what the costs are, but it's, the numbers are daunting, to say the very least, Kevin.
Right, and that's what I mean. I'm not saying knowledge as in how to do it, but it's all of that intertwined together, how to do it, how to accomplish it once you know how to do it, and how to get it off the ground, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, I hope I've spurred some ideas in some people just by bringing up the subject, because it, you know, when I did my fuzzy little math there, you know, it's doable to reach that funding level per month. In my mind, translating that into actual doing it, though, is much harder than, in my mind, it works, you know, real world again.
Exactly, so. Exactly. Well, Kevin, I appreciate the thoughts, and I hope we will talk soon.
All right, Bob, you take care.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John. How you doing?
Hey, John.
You know, I'm kind of in a reflective mood, I guess. It's a good night. I mean, just hearing from Juanita really just rose all my spirits. I was so happy to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I've been kind of reflective all day. I read something amazing, and it made me think just, you know, what a complex, beautiful world we really live in. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. There's this kind of, hang on with me here.
Okay.
This is kind of freshwater fish, right? And there's two related species. And they are weakly electric, right? So they kind of like electric eels, they can generate a very weak electric field in these two related species. And they just found out that one of those two species, when it shocks in AC. And the other one, when it shocks in DC. And I just, you know, I read that and I was like, wow, what an amazing place this world that we live in really is, in all its complexity. It's beautiful. And I think that it's worthwhile to sort of reflect every now and then. We're surrounded by ugliness, you know, but out there's just this amazing dance of life and death and rebirth and change that's always around us. And we ought to really appreciate it.
I think we probably ought to take considerably more time than we do to do that. The last, well, twice in the last 4 days, John. I like to, just before the program airs, I like to get out and just move around a little bit and be outside. And there's just, it happened this evening, and it happened a couple of nights ago, or a couple of evenings ago, something that absolutely just no painter could have painted it, no photographer could have photographed it, because the human eye is much more magnificent than any camera. And so you wind up with these little zen moments that you can just hope that your memory hangs on to. And I can still, because what had happened is we'd been overcast all day long. And as the sun, and now I'm all paranoid when I say the sun moves into the west, because we know the sun's not moving. We are.
Right.
But as sunset approaches, what had happened is the sun got low enough in the sky that it shot out from under the overcast. And the overcast reflected that light back to Earth, and it was just this almost purplish gray, but the direct sunlight was hitting the hills that still have the leaves on them, although they're all sort of a russet brown now. They just lit up. And I stood there staring at it. I had never seen anything quite so magnificent, anything quite so beautiful.
Wow.
And the same thing happened again today. And as I looked into the west, there were bands of, within the clouds, there were bands of pink and bands of purple and bands of gold that were separated by these gray clouds. And I was transfixed. And we have to take those moments, or we will be eaten alive by the Brian Fishers of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it gives us an appreciation of the idea that we're here, and we have issues and problems, and they're real, and they affect real people. But the larger dance of the universe doesn't care whether we're around or not. You know, we're not that vital of a part of the whole ecosystem. There's still going to be sunsets if we weren't here, and there's still going to be AC and DC electric fish if we're not here. We, like everything else, we have a right to fight for our position and to be around and to exist. But the problems, the things that threaten us, they're of our doing. You know, I was thinking about this today. I was talking to my kids about it was Maya Day in world prehistory, and I was channeling you the whole time. You know, I was just Scott Bob would have a lot to say here. But that was kind of the point. Like, the story, you know, I mean, obviously there are still Maya people around, 7 million of them, you know, mostly in Guatemala. But the decline of the great Maya civilization around, you know, 800, 900 of the Common Era, they didn't disappear. They weren't wiped out from outside. They declined and dispersed. The system that they were living in wasn't working anymore. It wasn't sustainable.
And you can argue that what they dispersed into, John, was a far more successful survival strategy, was it not? Because they've existed now for as long as their pyramid building dynasties existed before them.
Right. I mean, they're still around, and that's a really great point, because what stopped was the massive hierarchy and the way that some leaders could compel people to build pyramids and earthworks for them, and the idea that they needed to bleed to make the gods happy. You know, that's what disappeared. But the day-to-day life of people that are descendants of that continued on. And I guess that's kind of my point, I guess, is that collapse doesn't generally happen. It's change. And so it's change that comes about because of problems usually created by people that are internal. And you find a way to deal with it, or you disappear. You know, which I think is empowering, because that means that the issues that we face largely are creation, but that means we can deal with them if we have the will.
Absolutely. I was reading a historian the other day who remarked on, you know, Edward Gibbon's cites the beginning of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire to the ascension of Commodus to the imperial throne in the wake of Marcus Aurelius, but he puts the punctuation on it in 476 of the Common Era, with the fall of the very last Western Roman emperor, Romulus Augustulus. But the historian observed that Romulus Augustulus, when he was deposed, literally mailed in the royal robes back to Rome and went off to live in Campania, and history then loses sight of him, loses interest in him.
Yeah.
But the next sentence the historian wrote was, and the next day, business went on as usual. The clerks did their clerk things, the scribes did their scribe things, the priests did their priest things, the administrators did their administrative things, the bishops did their bishop things, and nobody said, by the way, the empire ended yesterday.
Yeah.
It was a matter of getting of going on with the fundamental business of living.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think it's very good that we sort of keep that perspective in place, because like you said, there will be sunsets after if there are no people, but there won't be anybody to talk about sunsets. We'll have to wait for something else to evolve to appreciate them if they possibly can, or maybe that won't be as necessary to survival. But
tell me. Yeah.
I think that overall is a big part of, you know, the ongoing conversation. Sure, we have our fun with the Brian Fishers of the world. And, you know, when you get right down to it, John, tell me if I'm wrong, he's a pitiable creature, isn't he?
I feel very sorry for him. Yeah.
He to be bound up in all that hate and all that dogma and all that superstition. And Jimmy Buffett has a line where he says, "And they put one night they put a price on the sunset." Well, how much value is there in a sunset if you try to measure it in terms of the dollars that Brian Fisher worships?
Yeah.
How beautiful! And here, let's go a little deeper. How much beauty is there in a sunset if you have to stop and think that sunset was brought to you by some external force instead of being just a magnificent moment that presents itself to you and you to it in the course of a transit of the universe? You know, it's kind of like what Robert was saying in his email earlier from Australia. We can see minute. We can see so far into space now that we can see minutes after the Big Bang. And the neat thing about that minutes after the Big Bang is that that's just minutes after what winds up being you and me and everybody in the Horn family commune and everything that's alive on this planet and everything that isn't was there.
It's like baby pictures of life itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's astonishing, and it's humbling, and it just really, I think I was talking kind of abstractly, but, you know, fracking and Keystone and wealth inequality and misogyny and all these things. I mean, these are you know in their own way, really very serious threats to our well-being, our livelihood, our chance to continue. But the feeling I have is, these are all artificial creations, you know, and so because we made them, we can unmake them. But there needs to be a will, and the problem is when money, which is the god apparently now, you know, when that interferes, it becomes very difficult to do that, to have that conversation. I don't know what the answer is, but I know that I mean we're not going to be wiped out by a zombie apocalypse, you know, maybe by a plague that we create because of antibiotics. But chances are, if we're like most other civilizations in history, it's going to be a long, slow, steady, sad decline into nothing.
But I think, John, I want to be careful about that adjective you just used, the sad decline, because all during that decline, People will celebrate the births of children. People will celebrate relationships. People will sit and break bread together.
Mm-hmm.
It may be harder to come by. It may be come by different circumstances. Perhaps the births will be fewer and further between. But the same things that made us human on the first days that we were are going to be the same things that continue to be human to us. Those things I don't think are going to be sad. It's the externalities that are sad. You know, you mentioned fracking, you mentioned Keystone XL, of course, mountaintop removal. Charlie Pierce today at his blog over at Esquire.com pointed out in his first post of the day these stories about autopsies being performed on dead whales. Now, that's a heck of a place to go in this conversation.
I love it.
But whales are being studied because they are dying unexpectedly. And it turns out, John, that they're dying of intestinal blockages and that their insides are found to be full of plastic. Plastic net, plastic sheeting from construction projects. Most of us remember that penguin movie about the one that was wearing the little six pack rings.
Yeah.
Right. Those. And it's a question of, because for anybody who can go see it, to be out there in the ocean and to witness whales. Pretty, I mean, that's one of those moments. That's one of the, wow, thank you. You know, and Kurt Vonnegut manifested it all in his, Cat's Cradle, when he wrote the, I got to be sitting up mud.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, that's not grim, that's celebratory. But I don't know quite where I'm struggling to get to. Except to say that, you know, there are fundamental things that make us all human. And one of the things is not necessarily bloody conflict. And we had this conversation a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
We do not have to be that which has been impressed upon us. Make sense?
Well, yeah. But I guess I sort of have an issue, though. I mean, if you get the stopping point, and
sure.
I hope this isn't just turning everybody off. But I guess my feeling is we get bloody conflict when we settle, when we farm, when our population grows, and so I feel like by extension, what you're saying is that to really connect with these very, very human things, you know, family and kin and relationships and stuff. I mean, are you kind of saying that we need to, you know, we need to depopulate, we need to be mobile? Because I mean that the problem with being really connected to the land and the seasons and very simple kind of life is that, you know, we can't support as many folks as we have now.
I don't ever want to bust out all Malthusian.
Right. I mean, the end of the day for the, you know, like the whole like green anarchist idea, which I, you know, I mean, I have some sympathy to, but the end of the day, you're looking at a massive depopulation. And I mean, who's that going to be? You know, I don't think that's a solution. I don't know. I think dispersal and decline, like, you know, Maya style decline would be very hard and very ugly. People who make it through would go on being human, but God, what a rough bill to pay, you know?
Yeah, it is. And that's why I think, John, it's worth pointing out that in our everyday lives, whether one lives in a city or one lives in a country, or whether one farms or works in a factory or Walmart or whatever one does, the decline that you were talking about is not something that anyone is individually out there working on.
Mm-hmm.
It is being forced upon us.
Yeah.
I cannot, for the life of me, get out of my head that article by Jeff Goodell in Rolling Stone from a couple of months back, Goodbye Miami.
Yeah.
It's a very real likelihood that everything south of Jacksonville is going to be underwater. And New Orleans is going to be underwater. Not just the lower Ninth Ward. It's going to go away. Corpus Christi, Galveston, Houston, mm-hmm. Boston, Baltimore, New York. Keep going. And nobody in any of those places is thinking, well, you know, I don't care. You bring it up. Well, I don't know. Maybe some are. But there are people at the top who are hastening that day. And they're doing it because they want nothing more than profit in the right now, John.
Yeah.
And I think we should reserve our scrutiny for those folks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Thomas Jefferson envisioned this nation of enlightened farmers working, you know, with their vine and their fig tree and working their plot of ground and talked about having room on this continent to populate it unto the thousandth generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was head in the clouds kind of guy sometimes, but you know, and look how American centric I was in that rattling off the names of cities that are going to be gone. What about when it's Manila?
What about
the entire country of Bangladesh?
Well, the Maldives. Remember the Maldives?
Right. Sure.
Years back, they had the underwater parliament meeting to bring attention to this. Remember what happened to the president of the Maldives?
Yeah. They put together a coup and threw him out. We can't have that.
Right. Backed by U.S. industry. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of money and hence power arraigned against trying to think a couple of generations out. You know, it worries me, but at the same time, I guess that's the point of this call is that, you know, like I'm aware of these things and it's concerning. But at the same time, there's kind of a comfort in the idea that, you know, humans have been through this before. We have examples of what not to do. And if we could pay attention to it, maybe we could do better this time around, you know?
As the intro to the old TV show used to say, we have the technology.
We have the knowledge. We have the technology. Let's use it. Well, anyway, thanks a lot, Bob.
It's an absolute pleasure, John. Thanks for the mind-expanding moment. And don't think that you didn't bore anybody. Believe you me. I promise you.
All right. Well, glad to hear it. My best to everybody. I'll get out of your way here.
All right. Take care, John.
All right.
Bye now. That's Dr. John with... That was not food for thought. That was a banquet for thought. Because we approach individual crises, individual problems, and we think, you know, we got... And look... Is there anyone a better example of that than me? This is not me touting me. This is me criticizing it. The crisis that I live with is a human rights existential crisis relating to the ability of human beings to go on being human beings in Appalachia because of mountaintop removal. But even those of us who are involved in that struggle will periodically stop and go, wait a minute, we're getting eaten alive again. Because there's got to be a long term outlook. It's not just within the struggle to end mountaintop removal, we've had this conversation. Let's say we end it tomorrow. Let's say that we get enough signatures on the AIC Act, HR 526. You know, you can help get those signatures. It's at AICAC.org. Let's say we get enough signatures to get a discharge petition and get it passed by the House, passed by the Senate, signed into law by the President, and everything, and we end mountaintop removal. What then? We have saved something. We've saved what's left of Appalachia, but what do we do with what we've saved? Heady question. Heady questions, indeed. Hey, welcome to the program.
Indeed, they are heady questions, sir.
Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well.
Well, I certainly can understand what Dr. John was talking about, the demyelinization of a population, and, of course, the encroachment of the sea upon our own country. And the trouble is, people do not react proactively, but only reactively, and then it's going to be too late. I mean, you know, there are certain countries, I think in the Benelux countries, that are trying to build floodgates and things that, like that to prevent excessive storm surges and things in the North Sea, which is pretty turbulent. Nonetheless, it's kind of a hard fought action, that's for sure.
Well, it is, and at one and the same time, Jim, the world is too small, and yet the world is too big.
Well,
we're here in a month or two. Is it the world is going to come together in Poland to have yet another meeting about climate change, and yet we know that one of the single biggest problems in dealing with climate change is, to quote Pogo, we have seen the enemy and they is us.
Well, you know, basically these conferences and things like that, unfortunately, have the way of becoming the way of the League of Nations was back in 1936, you know? They basically are overwhelmed by those people who will not participate, like China and some of these other places that, you know, just insist on destroying the environment and basically hastening the progress of global warming and things of that nature, which will lead to this. You know, that's the way historically things have gone on, and then you have to have something really cataclysmic to happen in order to get people's attention, but by then it'll be too late. I mean, we saw what that storm did to the subways of New York not too long ago, and they're still trying to work their way out of that.
Look, New Orleans is
Katrina, same thing.
Is still in recovery.
It is, but you know these questions. I hope will. I don't know. When you have people who are worried about having an Indian celebration in the White House and not focusing their attention on the real problems that confront the world, that's just kind of really...
But see, Jim, I think that is emblematic of a sort of cognitive breakdown in its own right, because bear in mind that those people think that they are worried about the things that matter, because to them, abortion and people having the right to get married to whomever they love is a greater problem than something like the climate changing on Earth in such a way that it may prevent humans from being able to go on living on the planet.
Well,
because they don't just as I don't believe in their demons, they don't believe in the scientific reality of climate change. They have utterly it's one thing to poke fun at them, Jim.
I don't poke fun at these people. They scare me to death, and I take them very seriously, like I said a couple weeks ago. I take them as seriously as I would a hooded cobra right within striking distance of my person.
But, I mean, they reject everything from Aristotle forward.
Well, there are a lot of ignorant people out there, and there are a lot of people who are willfully and purposefully ignorant because they think, you know, they basically say, who raised for me and to hell with everybody else, and operate while they deluge, you know? That's basically how they're...
Do you think there's a lot of people actually saying that?
Yeah,
I mean, I have no doubt that the 1% says it.
Yeah, they do. I mean, basically, they want to say, I'm going to get here as much as I possibly can and have all these things and come hell or high water at whose expense or whose degradation or whose being or whomever is being hurt or destroyed. They don't care. I mean, you saw the attitude of certain people about New Orleans back with Katrina.
Well, and more than that, I remember...
They were glad to see the Night Ward go, and they don't want to see it reestablished.
And I remember when the Republicans were having their presidential pageants in 2012, and that room full of teabaggers hooted and hollered and yelled, yay, when someone said, should we just let people die on the floor in the emergency room? Remember that?
Oh, yeah, they don't care.
As
long as it's not them, exactly right. They say, well... You know, that's his fault for not being able to have the wealth that I do and have the coverage and the attention that coverage will bring to medical practitioners in the ER and just leave somebody else in a gurney in the hallway or if they could even get inside. You know, it's just basically man's inhumanity to man as far as I'm concerned. It's the continuation of that. And the world cannot continue to support the burgeoning population that just continues and continues and continues. It just can't. There's no way it can be. And I'm being terribly Malthusian about that. But it's in the numbers. it's there. You can calculate it of the number of arable.
Well, I think there's even
human beings and you know, the development and human settlement, because you know the world, the land mass, according to what has been predicted by a lot of scientists, is going to decrease. I mean, maybe Kilauea in Hawaii is making more land, but I don't see many people living on it. Do you?
Not for any appreciable amount of time if the thing blows.
Well,
but there's something else to be considered too, Jim, and that is this: what we see now is a plan on the planet that is in action. It is working every day. That has at its base a determination that some people living some places, that it's okay for them to die, as long as other people living in other places do not. Consider the lifting of the rules that were in place against speculating in essential commodities of life. That was part of the origins of the bread riots that led to the Arab Spring in Egypt. Because people in another part of the world had decided that their ability to profit on margins on wheat were more important than the wheat eater's ability to go on eating it.
Well, there you go. You know, supply and demand. And no matter how much demand you have, if there's no supply because of whatever may decrease that ability to produce, I mean, it's going to have effect and result in very serious and very deadly things. And as I said before, you know, the whole thing is becoming so top-heavy now. Because, I mean, you're talking about animals being destroyed and whales being destroyed because of plastics found in their intestines and things of that nature. And there's so many other things that are being destroyed, too. And people just don't care. I mean, they don't want to think about it.
You know, Dr. John's specialty is archaeology, and I'll warrant he could probably verify this if he was, he's probably still listening. But one of the things that we know is that there are a lot of sites related to a lot of civilizations that are inaccessible to modern science because it's already underwater.
Absolutely.
Because humans have a habit of building communities near the sea because it's, frankly, easier to fish than it is to hunt buffalo.
It's commerce, too. It's commerce and trade and stuff of that nature. I mean, for example, look at modern-day Alexandria. How much of that is under the water now that used to be above the water back in the days of Cleopatra and the royal enclosure in which she lived? It's all underwater now. And the Pharaoh's lighthouse, earthquakes, there are all kinds of things, natural disasters and unnatural disasters that are, unfortunately, assailing our ability to continue and maintain things as they are. And I don't have any solution for it as far as people are concerned, because it would just appear that we have those individuals in positions of power and money who only care for one thing, and that is their own self-enrichment and their own self-aggrandizement.
And I think, Jim, you get it at a basic question, and that is this. Is there any way for this deeply fragmented culture, if we're going to be just United States centric, is there any way for the deeply divided culture, or what passes for it, of the United States to end its fragmentation, its sort of ideological balkanization, and work together towards solving a common problem? Because, I mean, we have done it in the past.
Well,
but have we passed some sort of tipping point, some sort of point of no return at which we can no longer do it? And I guess the same question can be applied to the larger so-called developed world. Again,
well,
I come back to this meeting in Poland.
Well, I would say that, you know, as far as a balancing act is concerned, the fulcrum has been moved in such a way that we are in contrabalance. That's the way I look at it. It would appear to me as though that's the way it is. You know, that's my own personal opinion. Of course, you know, I've always, you know, when we talked years ago about a desolationist, I've always thought that, you know, eventually something's just going to happen, whether it's man-made or natural or whatever, volcanoes, this, that, and the other. It doesn't bode well for the world in which we live. and the world in which we have grown to know and love, which is, in fact, as your previous caller, Dr. John, said, how it is very, very beautiful and extremely, it's extremely delicate. It's not indestructible. The balance that maintains the equipoise that provides the things that we enjoy, unfortunately, I'm afraid is being assailed horribly by forces that are, you know, like from the land of Mordor, you know, basically cutting down all the trees and this, that, and the other. I don't want to get Tolkien-esque here, but I mean, it's basically, I think that's what J.R.R. Tolkien was trying to point out when he was talking about the rise of the, you know, the Sauron and the orcs and the people like that. They were cutting down all the trees and destroying all the trees. And that's one of the reasons that Tolkien, I mean, placed such a emphasis upon the Entfolk or tree beard in people who, the trees that could walk. And I wish the trees could walk, and I wish the trees could rebel.
And I think he was talking a little bit about the rebellion of the rebellion of nature.
Well, nature will do that. Let me tell you, nature has a way of taking care of its own designs. And if you don't believe it, you can look at certain things that can happen, and it will make the plagues of Egypt look like a Easter pageant.
But what do you do? For instance, going back to that clip from last night with that phony, that charlatan, that fraud, David Barton, what do you do when an issue like climate change comes up, or tsunamis, or earthquakes, or volcanoes, or tornadoes, and their answer to it all is, well, that's because we have abortion? I mean,
well,
that seems almost insurmountable, Jim.
Well, not really. I mean, they used to say in Constantinople that buggery caused earthquakes. Same type of thing hadn't died away. And people are just blissfully ignorant or ignorantly blissful.
And, oddly enough, we were talking about the ultimate fate of Constantinople the other night.
That's right, when the Turks basically were able to penetrate those 30-foot-high walls, or I don't know how thick they were, or 30 feet, they were just almost impregnable. But in 1453, Turkish cannon with foam balls took them right down. That was it, you know.
Well, you remind me of something that our good friend Eugene Finnerman pointed out today, and of course you with the historical turning that you have, it is of course November the 7th.
Limited historical turnings, because you know I wish.
I think this will go right in. This will be in your wheelhouse, Jim. November the 7th, 1917.
Uh-huh.
Eugene titles it, "One Day That Shook the World, John Reed Padded the Rest."
10 days that shook the world.
Eugene titled his post, "Fool Russians Where Engels Feared to Tread," which is pretty clever, I think. And talks about the success of Lenin in and the Bolsheviks in taking Petrograd.
Yeah, they were smart. I mean, they took over the railroads, they took over the banks, the telephone exchanges, the communications things, which the provisional government hadn't even bothered to protect. And then, of course, they called out regiments of the Imperial Guard, and they say, well, you know, what's in it for us? The maintenance of the same, and, you know, and Lenin, of course, was smart enough to say, peace, bread, land, and reforms. And the provisional government only promised one thing, the continuation of a war that had devoured almost 7,500,000 Russians. So basically, you know, Lenin had his, you know, I guess when the Kaiser got him through wherever he needed to go, because that's who basically brought Lenin to the Finland station. And I recommend highly those books by Edmund Wilson, To the Finland Station and From the Finland Station, because they are excellent works of history and that particular revolution, you know?
Indeed.
But there's one thing I wanted to just remind our people of. 75 years ago, on 9 November of 1938, was Kristallnacht.
True. 2 days from now. Never forget.
Yes, November 9th was the anniversary, and, you know, or will be the anniversary of that. And talk about a horrible thing when I don't know, these brown shirts at the behest of Goebbels and Hitler and whomever, you know, were able just to go to the streets and create the night as a broken glass, throw people out of windows, throw their furniture out of windows. I mean, talk about something that shook the world. Or did it really shake the world? How many people really paid attention to it and the things that
would... Again, like Dr. John was talking about, it's something we look back now upon and realize the significance that it had. But many people did not realize the significance of it who weren't immediately involved in it.
That's the way people are. As long as it happened to me, well, I'll just have to open my newspaper to a different page and look at the sports page, the comics, or something like that.
And as we were given someone that we were talking about just a couple of nights ago, I'll worry about it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I'll cry tomorrow. Well, Dr. John's a very wise man. He has a lot of good things to say, and I enjoy his conversations. And I think he's worried about a lot of things that we've been talking about tonight. When he mentioned the very term demyelination, because we know what happened to those people. They were so interested in having limestone to whiten their buildings, they destroyed all their forests, and then what happened to them then? They had to leave all those pretty white buildings to be overwhelmed by the jungle, which didn't take very long, did it?
And you know what's interesting, as far as I can tell, the people who really lost out in that transaction, Jim, were not the people who were growing the maize and the beans and the squash and the chilies. The people, because they were able to go back, nothing much changed, really.
Those people...
They continued to farm in ways that they... No, the people who lost out were the people who said, listen, I'm important because I'm standing here on top of the pyramid, sticking a maguey thorn through my tongue to bleed for the gods for you. Because suddenly nobody was bringing them food anymore.
Yeah, and the whole thing just collapsed. That's the way it is. It collapsed from the bottom down, and, you know, in order to have any type of civilization, you've got to have some type of means to resource them, and we're just not able to do it. But nevertheless, I don't want to sound too pessimistic here, but it would just appear to me that's just the way things are going, and I just didn't want anybody to forget. And I guess it'll be Friday night, the 75th anniversary of the Night of the Broken Glass and what it presaged and how people paid so little attention to it.
Jim, before you go, you've got a request in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, could you have Jim discuss the British and American attack on the Bolsheviks at Archangel?
The British were... Ron, I'm sorry if I disappoint you, but as far as the British were concerned, of course, number one, they were very much afraid of Lenin and his Bolsheviks. And number two, they had promised, and America had promised, or Russia... You know, if you don't continue with the war and fighting the Germans, you will get no loans from us. No war, no loan. And as far as the British attack on the, I guess it would be the Bolsheviks in Archangel?
Yes.
I would assume that they were pursuing their own imperial interest because they did not wish Bolshevism to succeed in Russia. And they did not work.
And I think historically parallel to that, Jim, just as the entire monarchical machinery of Western Europe turned on Napoleon.
Well, they did. But
even before there was Napoleon. I just screwed up. Long before Napoleon came on, with the coming of the French Revolution and the Terror. That's when the crowned heads of state turned on France and said, oh, no, none of this.
Well, you know, before then, you know, Catherine the Great was very much an enlightened monarch and was in contact with Diderot and the encyclopedist or encyclopedist. And, you know, she was in her own ways very enlightened. But when she saw what happened in 1789 in France and how people were being guillotined and stuff like that, it sort of turned all the crown heads of Europe, and that's when they all had to basically, I think it was the Declaration of Pilnitz, when they said they would, I may be wrong there, I'm sorry, I'm just not as good as I used to be, you'll have to pardon me. But basically, the French Revolution, particularly in the Reign of the Terror, I mean, that was considered to be something they would not countenance. But look what it spawned. It spawned first the Directory, and then, of course, the dictatorship of Napoleon. And look what the revolution in Russia spawned. It certainly was not a liberal, democratic, humane Russia. It was a Russia that would produce people like Stalin and people like him, and you know, and Lenin himself, as much as a lot of people may admire his admiration or his desires, he was a very pragmatic politician. And as far as the attack on the forces at Archangel were concerned, basically that was galvanized by the fact they did not want Russia to succumb to Bolshevism and not to leave the war, because that would enable the entire German army to turn from east to west and give them a pretty hard time, which they already had for the previous 4 years of the war, when, you know, basically a war of position became a war of movement became a war of position, and the whole parts of the Western Front were nothing but mud mausoleums. I mean, they didn't want to countenance that. The trouble thing, one thing that was in their favor was Germany didn't ration their stuff properly. And they did not basically use the resources they had wisely, whether it was through arrogance or whatever, in that First World War. And when they took men off the farms and stuff like that, there was nobody left to replace them when they put them in the German army. So eventually, Germany, because of lack of resources and lack of men and materiel, even though the Ludendorff Offensive, or the Great Offensive of Ludendorff, or whatever you want to call it, and I think 1918, it only went like 10 or 20 miles and then into a salient, and then they just didn't have the push because the Americans had ended the war, and that was it. But the English had no desire to see Lenin and his Bolsheviks succeed, and they would attack them wherever they could, because, you know, there were lots of detachments in different parts of Russia, the whites against the reds. It was a bloody civil war, and that civil war in Russia, because of the whites and the reds and the famine that followed, cost Russia 4 million people from 1917 to 1924, over that 7 years. It was pretty grim. And of course, you know, the collectivization that followed after Stalin came to power in 1929, when they would try to take out all the farms and overwhelm the kulaks. And if you had a cow, they called you a kulak and an enemy of the people. And that wasn't very wise. And that's when, you know, basically even before then, Lenin had sense enough to realize that we've got to institute the NEP, the New Economic Program, so the country could grow and prosper and attempt to heal and survive in order to keep the farmers alive. But then after Lenin passed away with that terrible cerebral hemorrhage, and of course other people came to power like Stalin, that's when he began those collectivization drives, which totally wiped out the NEP program, the New Economic Policy. And they were literally cutting their own throats because they were starving their own people to death. And so, you know, the history of man is just filled with so many instances of man, inhumanity, man, and people making the wrong decisions who are in high positions of authority, like Stalin and some of his confederates. I mean, you've got people who just don't care about the other people. And as far as they're concerned, their only hope is to see these people dead, because they don't have to worry about them anymore. That's a very terrible and inhumane way of looking at things. It really is. I mean, the whole 20th century, by God, what a bloodletting operation we've performed upon our own human body.
Can it be argued, Jim, that the 20th century was humanity's low point and not its high point?
I would say this, and I'm quoting from The Devil's Advocate, when Al Pacino, playing the part of Satan, says, "The 20th century was all mine."
Yep, sympathy for the devil. Jim, thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
Well, I didn't have a lot to say, but nonetheless.
You said plenty. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Take care. Bye. Our buddy Jim. Going back to the mailbag before I go on to the phones again, 304-658-3333. First of all, thanks going out to Beth and to Anthony. They have helped us get a little further. And now, thanks to Sal, we are rapidly approaching meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening, which will be good news to Shirley. We are about $40 away at this point. So thank you to Sal and to Beth and to Anthony for advancing that effort as they have done. Thank you very, very much. A couple of notes coming in. Going back to Juanita's call, I had a note from Danny in Louisiana Stan. Subject line, the Horn family. It really is amazing, Bob. When your fans have fans, I know you're doing something right. Juanita was one of the first family members I heard when I found the Horn. She said something hysterical back then, but I can't remember what it was. Damn it. And Sandra, I believe she's from California. I'd love to take her to dinner and have a whiskey with her and with you. And then on a topic I raised earlier with regard to the rape-proof underwear. Oh, my God. Men stopping raping women? What a novel idea in Red State America. And also on that note, from Dr. John, under the subject line, teaching men not to rape. That's a great idea. It'd improve our society in so many ways. Problem is, nobody makes a buck off of that like some folks do selling rape-proof underwear. And nobody can continue to control women like some folks do selling rape-proof underwear. You know, the very idea of that is just so godforsaken obnoxious. It's, well, ladies, it's your duty to buy rape-proof underwear. It's obnoxious for the philosophy that underpins it, that somehow, I don't know, I guess just like birth control, that it is deemed to be the woman's problem and the man's to solve. And then, of course, there's the ever-present problem of mice and mouse traps and locks and lock picks. Ah, you've got rape-proof underwear. Well, that means somebody'll get busy out there, because if there's a market for rape-proof underwear, there's a market for somehow to get around rape-proof underwear. And it is so 11th century. Well, 11th century Western Europe. Sheesh. And I've got a note here, a story I've got to find a way to share this. It comes from Kim in New York City. Bob, this might have been more appropriate for prayer meeting Wednesday, but who is more thorn in the side on Thursday than Dim Leader? As a non-religious Jew, I am more than a bit repulsed by his latest venture. So please remind me to get back to this in a minute or two. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. I'll break it down fast.
Hey, Bill. Go ahead. Take your time.
First of all, the music you went off with, I was lucky and gifted enough to see Slick in the Airplane and, of course, Joplin. And then there was Tracy Nelson who recorded she was a West Coast. I don't know. Last time I saw her, she was working on the Nashville Network as a background singer, but they did an LP called Living with the Animals. So there was some real young people in breaking out in the 60s who had something to say, female singers that were getting a break that rock didn't, give a lot of folks at that time. But, and then you and Jim tonight. Well, first of all, Dr. John, I'm trying to remember if anybody was manufacturing a crankbait, you know, the thing that looks like a fish.
Yeah.
And you toss it out, and they run it certain a feet. You could find which, the manufacturers would tell you what depth they ran at. But I was wondering if anybody had made a lit one. I would use slip bobbers where you could raise and lower the line in a matter of seconds. And I'd use lit ones at night because it was a great way to see something hitting you at night. But I have a 9-pound walleye that I got with a crankbait at 4 o'clock in the morning. Biggest fish I ever caught in my life. Nah. 7-pound, not a 9-pound. Don't lie, Bill. Damn fisherman. You can't never tell the truth.
Yeah.
But getting to what Jim was talking about, two American regiments went over there to try to protect all this weaponry that we could that was the reason when they were told they were going to protect the weaponry. There was the 27th Wolfhound Regiment, which was on the western side of Russia, and on the east was the 31st Polar Bears. Now, the 27th performed some really good work on the good work, if you call surviving, and the Pusan perimeter, the Wolfhounds. But the 31st, the Polar Bears, were the guys that were garrisoning Manila in 1940 and 41. Ever since they were pulled out of, I think they were up in Siberia somewhere, ostensibly protecting shipments of weapons to the Tsar. But you and I and Jim know better than it was not just protecting the weaponry. It was to try to influence things, you know. But hell, two regiments weren't going to influence the rising Red Army, you know. Hell, the Tsarist Army couldn't control. Well, the Tsarist Army had been bloodletted so bad in World War One that it wasn't even, you know, there was nothing. It was just a waste of human life in a style you can't imagine. I know Churchill had a secret plan. He was going to build a lot of monitors, you know, coastal attack ships.
Yeah.
And they were going to land in the north side of Germany, 75 miles east, northeast of Berlin. He wanted to land. He wanted the Tsar to give him a million or more men to land on that close to Berlin. And, of course, that fell through, you know. You know, Churchill seemed to have some of the most crazy ideas. Well, you know the one that we think of immediately is the attempts to, when Turkey got into the war, or to help push Turkey into the war, to rush through the Dardanelles and seize Istanbul. Because Turks had closed the exit from the Black Sea. And the Russians were shipping, I read their totals of potatoes they were shipping out and stuff through the Black Sea, and I never realized that Tsarist Russia had this kind of a thing to do, to sell, you know. I mean, they don't, of course, they can't teach you that in school. Hell, like my one buddy says, they don't even teach American history anymore.
Well, I figured that Dr. Bill would probably agree with you, Bill.
Because I thought I knew something until I started listening to the constitutional stuff. And it was all everybody digging to try to find a spot for what they wanted. You know, for the powers that they wanted for, and it was a lot of it based on, well, you know, when I tell people that the states themselves, I can think of two right offhand, Pennsylvania and Maryland. Wasn't there a little bit of religion involved in who settled there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Some bad feelings.
Yeah. And I don't know about the others. I would say that the Southern religion was a lot of Presbyterian.
That's your poor Scots incursion.
Yeah.
But the Southern aristocracy is largely Anglican.
Anglican, yes, they would be, because my uncle married a woman whose family was on like the third or fourth ship after the Mayflower. Of course, me, with my family, would have probably come in if they needed a garbage scow, you know.
Now quit that.
I'm kidding. The thing about me is I'll bust my own chops first if there's a laugh to be had. It was good enough for Rodney Dangerfield and a few others. It's good enough for me, that's for sure. Take a shot at yourself. But yeah, that was the, those two regiments that were over there guarding, supposedly, because I'm working for the umpteenth time a story called Ghost Soldiers, where when we got back into the Philippines, there was 1,000 POWs in the early days, the Bataan Death March, a lot of them, there was a possibility the Japanese were going to kill. Because I have a problem when it comes to Japan, because the Germans, their accurate record keeping, as my one German friend tells me, the fact that they kept such accurate records of what they did, you know, everybody, if you don't know about the Holocaust, what the hell planet are you living on, Bob? You know? If you have never heard of it, or
I don't think it's quite so much those who haven't heard of it, but the negative and toxic influence of those who don't think it was real.
Well, there's a few people out there. There's a few people I know personally who told me, "Oh, Bill, don't buy all that stuff. That's not all true." Well, believe me, and you know yourself, Bob, that the whole thing was a gigantic iceberg. And the biggest part of it, and the tip of it, was anti-Jewish. Let's start there. But if you were a gypsy, or...
differently abled?
What?
If you were a gypsy, differently abled, homosexual,
yep.
Political dissident...
They'd get around to you eventually. And they say, my mother told me, my grandmother, her mother, who immigrated from Germany in the early 1900s, late 1890s, because, you know, a lot of that stuff was kept secret over here during the war. It wasn't until our people in Europe were breaking into the camps, and there was no way you could hide it anymore. There's no way you could... What was the thing about the boat that... we refuse to let land here.
I know what you're talking about. I can't recall. Shame on me. Can't recall, recall the name.
But myself, they made a movie out of it. And you know, when you're a young kid and you read this stuff, maybe that's why my hair is left. You know, maybe that's when it started falling out, when you start reading these. But you hit it on the nose about the 20th century. I don't know. Now, frankly, is probably the most, not peaceful, but most unorganized. I mean, there's no massive amounts of armed men wearing uniforms and such killing each other at this point, unless you can think of something, which I might have missed, because the newspapers today are a piece of dog. Well, that's one thing why I always liked having newspapers, dogs. I had a few dogs, too, and... with dogs, you know, I had a good dog run, but newspapers were a handy thing to have around, too, here and there. You never knew. But anyway, it was interesting to follow Jim, because he was right on the nose, and, you know, most Americans don't know the incursions into Russia. They gave one reason, we've got to protect these weapons, blah, blah, blah. And Jim talked about the Ludendorff offensive. There's a pretty good book. It's called 1917, the penultimate round, and it studies the things. And then there was British launched an attack up in Belgium at a place that I can't pronounce. It's spelled Ypres.
Ypres.
Ypres?
Ypres.
That was what I was guessing at. Yeah, and I think I've read a good book on that where they gained 4 miles and the casualty totals were around 500,000. If you can believe that, 500,000. And that's the kind of stuff that I began to learn that, you know, because when I was a kid, I saw the National Geos and all the stuff from World War II, and I thought, what a great thing to do, go into the service and, you know, on the Civil War stuff, you know, the honor and the glory. It's like...
Well, by the way, Bill, you mentioned the Philippines, and, you know, there's much more than simply history there. Even as we speak, I'm watching a computer loop of the largest storm of the year.
Yes.
Running right up Lady Gulf.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, this thing is mind-boggling, and it's further proof of just how Euro and North American-centric we can be. This thing has Category 5 winds.
Oh, Jesus.
Thunderstorms. Monumental storm surges, massive thunderstorms. The damn thing is so tall it reaches the lower reaches of the stratosphere.
That Gulf gets busy enough, you may see stuff floating up.
It was expected to be making landfall by about 4 o'clock earlier this afternoon.
Oh.
And the folks at Weather Underground said it was expected to hit the Philippines at Category 5 strength. And to view this, I mean. This thing looks like a living thing. It looks like a cell. It's got a nucleus. It's got a wall, and it just.
Oh yeah, this stuff.
And yet at the same time, because you know, folks like the evangelical fundamentalists are worried about gay folks and abortion.
Yeah.
And even some on our side, you know, if we see a hurricane form in the Atlantic tropics, you know, we'll worry, you know, is it going to hit the Gulf? Is it going to hit the East Coast? This thing is huge.
That is.
And you know, and, you know, this is the second ginormous storm of the Pacific storm season. And this is, I mean, are we to understand that this is simply a matter of happenstance?
No.
This is just dumb luck?
We have the feeling, and this backed up with science, that global warming and such is has changed things to the worst, even. You know, the storms were always had a potential.
Sure.
But,
I mean, you know, the clip from yesterday, that charlatan, that fraud, that huckster, David Barton, talking about it, you know, if only we'll stop aborting the little babies, that the tornadoes will stop. I mean, that was what he was saying.
Really?
That, yeah, because, you know, suddenly, I guess Oklahoma won't be tornado prone anymore, and college towns in Alabama won't be blown into nothing with 20 or 30 or 40 people dead, you know, if we'll just take more better care of the little fetuses.
Yeah.
And there's that, you know, there's that cognitive disconnect that I was talking with Jim about that I can't get away from. You know, nobody can stop a hurricane, but we can stop the processes that are making the hurricanes worse.
Well, there was a huge storm of tidal wave, and a guy who wrote the short history of the Civil War names it, and I had to go look it up what it was. That I guess it took out around India and such. It was a huge storm, and this was over 150 years ago that this thing happened. But it seems to be happening more and more now.
By the way, a note in from Jim. The ship you were trying to remember was the St. Louis, and I'm sorry, I didn't remember it. And yes, at Ypres, the poison gas usage was part of what contributed to that massive loss of life.
Yeah.
So.
Because that, it's amazing what has been done by humanity, and you hit it on the nose. I agree with you 100% on the 20th century. You couldn't seem to find a time when somebody was not engaged in a very bloody confrontation with somebody else.
And yet, what does it say for our country that it also marks the high water mark of American wealth?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. Is there a connection between the two, Bill?
Well, you know, I can't. People don't understand me today when I talk about the difference of for the working class in the 50s and 60s and what it's getting to be today. They don't get it because it's too far removed for. Because that post-war, well, the biggest number of men, for instance, in this case, that we ever graduated from college were the years after two, when the GI Bill was putting guys through that always had the brains and ability but didn't have the cash. It even affected athletes. Art Donovan, you ever hear the name?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So, yeah, that played for Baltimore. He went to Cleveland. Choice at one time, and Paul Brown traded him to Baltimore for a guy named Don Colo, I think. But anyway, and Colo was a good defensive tackle, too. But anyway, to make a long story short, Donovan had fought on Okinawa and such, and for the Baltimore football team to pay him $10,000 in the mid-50s for a guy who'd been through Okinawa. What else is it? What's better than that? Was nobody shooting at him? And, of course, Donovan's thing was, he said he liked spam anyhow. So if you like that stuff, being in the Army wasn't from the standpoint of for eating. It was no worse than what he liked, you know. But there's so many aspects, anything from sociology to educational, and I'm not even talking about the study of the warfare itself. It's the political repercussions all over the place. You know, it's just because everything seems to have an effect somewhere along the line, and what's going on in this country now is enough to Bob, all the books I read about, you know, one of the first things I said is a thing called The Boys, Robert E. Lee, and I had such a high regard for the man. And I still, as in many aspects, think he had some fine qualities. But was it his father that fought in the Revolution?
Uncle, maybe? Light Horse Harry.
Light Horse Harry, yeah. But, you know, there's this, everybody has the, I mean, I don't want to sit here and talk about the bad things that I did, although there's going to be a lot of laughs involved, but on the other hand, you know, go write a book, Bill, you know, and maybe you'll do all right there. That might be more fun than, because I just was funny that I ran into a lot of people, just incidentally, as they say, like the guy that runs Fox News now, well, what the hell, the fat guy, Ailes. Doing political commercials for that guy because he was doing a show on the hippie thing in the 60s, and I was his contact for some of the poets and such that I knew, people that I happened to know because of being in coffee houses and, you know, the time and the place. As you know, being, like, how many people have you met that you would not have met if you were not involved in what you do?
Oh.
Or what, ostensibly a living, I know.
You throw that term around mighty loosely, Bill.
Well, anymore, it seems that's what it seems to be for everybody I know. Well, it's, you know, for what the amount of work you put in, Bob. That's the thing, too. The amount of work, and I won't tell you, but I could take a while. I couldn't do anything but take a wag at how much the studio and production cost you.
It didn't cost me.
Or somebody.
That was, you know, that's why we memorialize Gina every night.
Yeah.
It was Wayne funded and built this studio as a living memorial to his lovely, wonderful, magnificent, vivacious wife Gina.
Is he when you say built it, was he electronically inclined as well?
Oh no. He funded its creation.
Oh, okay. Because sometimes you go back in these older generations and men who could and would attempt to do anything from build their own house to care. I mean, hell, Bob, I've torn engines and out of cars and put heads in, and, you know, everything on a car just about I've done, including blue air when I worked on it. The air was blue with my first mother-in-law. Asked my first wife, did he have to speak like that when he's working? And then her son became a diesel mechanic. And then she heard her youngest son, and she figured, do you have to talk that way when you frustrate yourself with that kind of stuff? You know, the wrench slips and you slam your hand into a piece of cast iron or an engine, it's like, oh!
Yeah, and all the fun ones come flying out.
Well, I sounded like a religious believer. Point, you know? I called upon Mr. Christ to come down and witness how much my hand hurts. Hell, I blew a battery.
Here, would you look at this? Yeah.
Yeah. I had a battery when I was 32. I made the mistake of just slightly moving a jumper cable. I got a face full. And I often wonder about the eyes, but it was longer than 25 years that this stuff finally hit me. So I don't think it was the battery acid. Maybe that I could use that to describe if a woman didn't like my face. I said, well, it was good until, you know. But yeah, things happen. Well, I'm sure you can, if you've done any amount of work on anything in the house, it's if you don't get hurt now and then, you know, the trick is to get up. A buddy of mine who's a fantastic, he came over yesterday and my monitor had just quit. But it was an Edison model, so it was about time, you know. And
not the company, the guy.
The guy, yes. He was personally autographed by Thomas Edison. But he took me out, and I picked up something again because I live on this stuff, including listening and talking to you is something that's important. And we have a friend who sent me some wonderful Mosley novels. What the heck's his first name? Mosley. Crime writer.
Mosley.
Devil in a Blue Dress.
Oh.
Walter.
Yes.
That's it. All right, you know, I'm getting to that point.
See, that's my job. I sit here, and then you remember.
Well, thank you. Because sometimes I, people say, what's your name? I say, well, let me look, you know. Who am I today, you know? Well, that's another situation. I've had a few women in my life that when they what they used to call MD, and that wasn't a medical doctor. Now they call it something else, but they were, you never knew what personality you were running into.
Oh, by the way, Bill, I was talking earlier about fan mail. You got fan mail from Philip here. He says, damn, Bob, I could listen to Bill's stories, recollections, recounting of history for hours. As far as I'm concerned, he's the Horn Studs Terkel.
Well,
if he ever gives a... Hold on, you got to get the whole fan mail in here. You won't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, he's the Horn Studs Terkel. If he ever gives up music, he could be a professional raconteur. I'd pay money to hear it, him, you, and Jim, in a three-way conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And with that, Philip finished off fundraising for this evening to meet Shirley's challenge. So thank you, Bill, and thank you, Philip.
Well, I'm gonna let you go, Bob, but it's the people I listen to here, too. I mean, there's people that have something that even I, who think he's seen it all, the things change. I mean, I thought I saw it all when my uncle, who was in his 70s and had been an electronic tech all of his life, called me over to work on his TV because he just couldn't do it anymore. Now I know how he felt, because it's frustrating as hell to deal with stuff that you used to, you know, snap your fingers and be able to do. And now I think I snap my fingers, yeah. Okay, I just told you that.
Yeah, okay.
Anyhow,
you had me double-checking, so... Yeah.
Well, you tell him thanks. It's nice to be able to share these things that are not talked about, because I have a friend of mine who's a great high school history teacher. He taught, you know, a lot of Tourette's kids in Lake County, and when he first met me, we were playing a bar somewhere, and the first thing he asked me at the end of the break was, where did you go to school? And the old joke was Knox College.
Yeah.
And not KNOX either.
No.
And read, which was the American way of education years ago. It was something that...
Well, it was back when information was deemed to be A, good, that the idea that people of all walks of life could have access to knowledge if they would avail themselves of it. And I think it's a function of a fairly deliberate effort to make sure that we spend all our time amusing ourselves into oblivion now instead of learning.
Yeah. TV today doesn't do much for me. It's, you know, when I talk to people, young kids, about zombies, and I said, well, when I was a youngster, the thing that zombies would show up in an Abbott and Costello comedy, you know.
That or the well-placed tiki bar.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, stay out of trouble.
All right, take care, Bill.
Good night.
Bye. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. About 9 minutes before the hour, and that does not give me sufficient time to do do justice to this little piece of madness that I got from Kim in New York City. Oh, my. We'll save it for Friday on the front porch. Jim says, Bill enhances his own golden years. Bravo. Please tell him. Consider it done, Jim. By the way, let's just end with a giggle. I'm looking at a graphic here. Rand Paul proves writing prowess with new children's book, Barry Trotter and the Sorcerer's Bone. The piece from Freewood Post says, this December, Senator Rand Paul will answer critics and prove his writing prowess by releasing his first children's book, Barry Trotter and the Sorcerer's Bone. The presidential hopeful has been besieged this week by reports of widespread plagiarism. According to Paul, the criticism annoys the hell out of me and suggested he would take extreme action of dueling if dueling were legal in Kentucky. We covered all of that. Paul wrote Barry Trotter and the Sorcerer's Bone in just 3 days and describes it as a modern-day tragedy where three children, Barry, Harmony, and Don, are tricked into siding with a socialist government against the hero Lord Voldemort. Continues Paul, I wanted to create a hero who could really speak to our current plight. Voldemort, through hard work and determination, becomes the most powerful wizard on the planet. As he reaches his goals, the government, known as the Ministry of Magic, swoops in and says he can only use certain types of magic. They also create laws protecting non-magical people, or Nuggles, even though those Nuggles bring no value to society. On the side of the villains is Professor Dumbledore, whose hippie liberal propaganda is destroying the Dogwart School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Well, it's official. Rand Paul has become a joke that writes itself. A lot of us knew he was a joke early on. I honest to God, I kid you not, the first time, and it was years ago now, long before even the election season, I was driving along a highway in eastern Kentucky. I was headed for the first time, I think, to Jenny Wiley State Park for a meeting. And there on some scraped-out hillside, I saw a sign. Homemade, spray-painted lettering, Rand Paul for Senate. And I guess shame on me, I looked at it and said, oh my God, they're kidding, right? They weren't kidding. None of them are kidding. They will eat this country alive or gag in the process, as far as they're concerned. Jim noting, maybe next Rand Paul can write a story about the thing he killed that's on his head. Rand Paul, Goatwick Boy. And as I noted in talking with Bill, we have completed fundraising for this evening and fully matched Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So thank you, Shirley, for getting it started. And thank you to Philip, to Robert, to Kevin, to Beth, to Anthony, and to Sal for making the match happen. That's how this continues to exist. Solely on your determination. So thank you very, very much. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Remember, if you'd like to be part of the Skype Horn Malloy Skype group, and you'd like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch in that portion or that forum, shoot me your contact details or just reach out to me at Bob Kincaid Horn, and I'll pass them along to Duncan, and you'll be part of the conversation. Of course, the phone lines will be open as well. That's what makes it for such a merry, rollicking, rockin' good time. Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn tomorrow evening. Until then, I'll thank you very much for all of your time. Thank you for your ideas, your comments, your emails. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you for your Facebook postings. Thank you for the precious, unrecoverable time. Finite, the most finite thing on the planet that you share in joining in this community and this conversation. Thank you, however you do it. Thanks always go out to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks especially this evening to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, who revived the Horn chat room this evening. It's awfully nice to have it be back to being its homey self. Try it out sometime if you never have. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Thank you. And thanks to our news ninjas, Gene, Susan. Thank you to John Fox, who had a brief conversation with him last night. My God, that man is busy. Hey, John Fox. Don't burn the candle at both ends, brother. Or save something in the middle. Thank you very kindly to John Fox. He helps us keep all of the technology here in some semblance of order over, yea, verily, these many, many years. My association with John Fox is, 8 years old this month. Because it was just about a month after we started the Horn that John came on board. So thank you, John. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. One can never overstate the importance of what Ben has done with the White Rose Society in preserving progressive radio via the White Rose Society for in excess of 10 years now. and having never sent a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and yes, ACACT, ACHEACT.org, ACACT.org. This is how we will end the ongoing nightmare of mountaintop removal in Appalachia. Go there, be part of the grassroots, genuine effort to end mountaintop removal. ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.